ജയം ശുപാല പരമഹംസ പരിവ്രാജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്ര ശതശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ അഭയചരണാരവിന്ദ ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത ഗോസ്വാമി മഹാരാജ ശീല പ്രഭുപാദിക്ക് ജയം നിത്യലീലാ പ്രവിഷ്ട വിഷ്ണുപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിവ്രാജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്ര ശതശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ ഭക്തിസിദ്ധാന്ത സരസ്വതി മഹാരാജ ശീല പ്രഭുപാദിക്ക് അനന്തകോടി വൈഷ്ണവ വൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് നാമാചാര്യ ശ്രീ ഹരിദാസ് ഠാക്കൂർക്ക് പ്രേം സഹോ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യ പ്രഭു നിത്യാനന്ദ ശ്രീ അദ്വൈത ഗദാധാര ശ്രീവാസാദി ഗൗരഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ശ്രീ ശ്രീ രാധാകൃഷ്ണ ഗോപഗോപിനാഥ ശ്യാമകുണ്ട രാധാകുണ്ഡഗിരി ഗോവർദ്ധാനയ്ക്ക് വൃന്ദാവൻ ധാമയ്ക്ക് മായപ്പൂർ ധാമയ്ക്ക് മധുരപുരി ധാമയ്ക്ക് ജഗന്നാഥ് പുരിധാമയ്ക്ക് ദ്വാരകാപുരി ധാമയ്ക്ക് ഗംഗമായിക്ക് യമുനമായിക്ക് തുളസിദേവിക്ക് ഭക്തിദേവിക്ക് സാമവേദ ഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ഗൗർ പ്രേമാനന്ദി ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ദി സിമ്പിൾ ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ദി സിമ്പിൾ ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ദി സിമ്പിൾ ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ശ്രീ ശ്രീ ഗുരുവൻ ശ്രീ ഗൗരംഗ ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ശ്രീ പ്രഭുപാദ് നമോ വിഷ്ണുപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസ്ഥായ ഭൂതലേ ശ്രീമതി ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത സ്വാമി നിധി നാമിനി നമസ്തേ സരസ്വതി ദേവി ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരണേ നിർവിശേഷ ശൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യ ദേശധാരിണേ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ സംസാരസാഗരേ മഗ്നം ലീനം മാം കരുണാനിധേ കർമ്മഗ്രാഹഗൃഹീതാംഗം മാമുദ്ധര ഭവാർണവാത് ശ്രീമദ്ഭാഗവതാഖ്യോയം പ്രത്യക്ഷകൃഷ്ണമേവ ഹി സ്വീകൃതോസി മയാ നാഥ മുക്ത്യർത്ഥം ഭവ സാഗരേ മനോരഥേ മദീയോയം സർവദാ ത്വയാ നിർവിഘ്നേനൈവ കർത്തവ്യം ദാസോഹം തവ കേശവ ഭവേ ഭവേ യഥാ ഭക്തി പാദയോർസ്തവ ജായതേ തഥാ കുരുഷ്വ ദേവേശ നാഥസ്ത്വം നോ യദ പ്രഭോ നാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം യസ്യ സർവപാപ പ്രണാശനം പ്രണാമോ ദുഃഖശമനം തം നമാമി ഹരിം പരം ജന്മാദ്യസ്യ യതോന്വയാദിതരദ ചാർത്തേഷ്വഭിജ്ഞസ്വരാൻ തേനേ ബ്രഹ്മഹൃദായ ആദികവയേ മുഹ്യന്തി യൽ സൂരയാം തേജോ വാരിമൃതം യഥാ വിനിമയോ യത്ര ത്രിസർഗോ മൃഷ ധാംനാ സ്വേന സദാ നിരസ്തകുഹകം സത്യം പരം ധീമഹി ധർമ്മപ്രോജ്ജിത ഗൈതവോത്രപരമോ നിർമ്മത്സരാണാം സദാം വേദ്യം വാസ്തവമത്ര വസ്തു ശിവദം താപത്രയോന്മൂലനം ശ്രീമദ്ഭാഗവതേ മഹാമുനികൃതേ കിം വാ പരൈരീശ്വര സദ്യോ ഹൃദ്യവരുദ്ധ്യതേത്രകൃതി ശുശ്രൂഷുഭീ തക്ഷണാ നിഗമകൽപതരോർഗലിതം ഫലം ശുഖമുഖാതമൃതദ്രവ സംയുതം പിബത ഭാഗവതം രസമാലയം മുഹുരഹോരസികാ ഭുവി ഭാവുകാഃ സച്ചിദാനന്ദരൂപായ വിശ്വോൽപത്യാദിഹേതവേ താപത്രയ വിനാശായ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ വയം നുമ യം പ്രവ്രജന്തം അനുവേദമഭേദകൃത്യം ദ്വൈവായനോ വിരഹകാതരമാജ്യുഭാവ പുത്രേതി തന്മയതയത്തരവോഭിനേതു തം സർവഭൂതഹൃദയം മുനിമാനതോസ്മി യസ്വാനുഭാവമഖിലശ്രുതിസാരമേകം അധ്യാത്മദീപമതിതിദീർഷതാം തമോന്ധം സംസാരിണാം കരുണയാഹ പുരാണഗുഹ്യം തം വ്യാസസൂനുമുപയാമി ഗുരും മുനീനാം നാരായണം നമസ്കൃത്യ നരം ചൈവ നരോത്തമം ദേവീം സരസ്വതീം വ്യാസം തതോ ജയമുദീരയേ കമനീയ കിശോരമുഗ്ധമൂർത്തേ കളവേണുകുണിതാദൃതാനനേന്ദോഃ മമ വാചി വിജൃംഭതാം മുരാരേ മധുരീം കനികാപികാപികാപി നമാവോം വിഷ്ണുപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസ്ഥായ ഭൂതലേ ശ്രീമതേ ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത സ്വാമി ഇതി നാമിനി നമസ്തേ സരസ്വതി ദേവീം ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരിണി നിർവിശേഷ ശൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യദേശധാരിണി ശ്രീമത് ഗുരുചരണാരവിന്ദാഭ്യാം നമ വന്ദേ നന്ദവ്രജസ്ത്രീനാം പാദരേണുമഭീഷ്ണശ യാസാം ഹരിഗതോ ഗീതം പുനാദി ഭുവനത്രയം ഗോപീശരണാരവിന്ദ പരമാനവേ നമ. പീതാംബരം കരവിരാജിത ചക്രശംഗം കൗമോദകീ സരസിജം കരുണാസമുദ്രം രാധാസഹായമതിസുന്ദര മന്ദഹാസം വാതാലയേശ മനിഷം പ്രതിഭാവയാമി. കോമളം കൂജയൻ വേണും ശ്യാമലോയം കുമാരക വേദവേദ്യം പരം ബ്രഹ്മ ഭാസദാം പുരതോ മമ. മൂകം കരോതി വാചാലം അംഗം ലംഘയതേ ഗിരിം യൽകൃപാതമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം. ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ നമ ശ്രീമതി രാധികായ നമ. സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദനാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ. So, as an introduction to this Vedastuti or Shruti Gita, different names in the Bhagavatam, we saw yesterday that the that Krishna, who is the situated in everyone's heart, out of when a person is aspiring to realize the truth and he is finding it very difficult to shift his attention from the world to the soul inside, Antaryami inside takes a form and comes out, which is the spiritual master, and he takes, pushes us from outside to inside. That is what is mentioned in the Bhagavatam as Svechopata Prithak Vabhu, called Uddhava mentioned, talks about Krishna. Svechopata Prithak Vabhu. In other words, so our attention is always in the different forms in this world. And when that attention becomes very distracted, all our energy, Shraddha inside, gets distributed in everything in this world. And it is very difficult when Shraddha has fallen into the different objects in this world, to bring that back into towards the soul is difficult for most of the people. And therefore, in the Bhagavatam, they mentions here that the only way is Antaryami himself comes outside and push it inwards. Only then it can happen. So when that happens, normally the objects outside takes our attention, pulls it out. All the objects in this world takes our attention away from inside to outside. But in Krishna's case, what happens is when Krishna comes out, by Krishna's pressure, we feel all our attention will go back towards the soul. And that is why, as I mentioned yesterday, in Sri Vaishnava Sampradayam, they call this as Vibhuti. Vibhuti. What is the speciality with this Vibhuti? Vibhuti. So, normally all objects in this world, all amazing things in this world, many, many things in this creation attracts our attention. Like people get attracted by all wonderful things in this world, isn't it? So all of them, they takes our drishti away from inside and pulls towards that object. And vibhuti, what it does is, the speciality with vibhuti is, it takes our attention from outside towards the soul, towards Atma. So all the great personalities, Mahatmas, realized souls in this world, that is their nature. Similarly, also Archavadaram. Archavadaram means the deities in the temple. That's also meant to do that. And that exactly is also the purpose of Vedam or Shruti. So, the appearance of this Vedam, Shruti, Veda personified itself is our Vastu, which is Bihirmukham. Bihirmukham means externally oriented. In order to shift that attention from the world and change that attention or shift that attention inwards and make us realize what our Swarupam or identity is. And that is why Vedam is outside. Shruti is outside. Who are we? What is our real identity? And that is why, in order to show that, in the Bhashyam it mentions here, suppose Shruti Janani or Mother Veda, if she has not shown this to us, that our Swarupam is inside, not outside, any form that what we see. If Vedas has not shown this to us, there was no other way of knowing this with our intelligence. There was no other possibility. That is why Ajahn Swami mentions that. If Vedam has not shown to us that our spiritual identity is inside and not outside in the world, it would have never been possible for us to find it out, find that truth. That is the important point. So, when Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that Krishna says, that is my greatest opulence, he says, isn't it? What is that? Aham alma gudakesha sarva bhudashayasthida aham adhyamcha madhyamcha bhudanam andamevacha. Krishna is saying there. Krishna says that my presence inside as the soul of everyone is the greatest opulence. All other opulences mentioned in that 10th chapter, they are not as important as this, because this is the greatest opulence, Krishna is saying. So, because it is like that, that is a source where Krishna has to be found. Inquiry must be directed towards that source. Aham alpa gudakesha. So, here also, that satyam, that truth, if Vedamada or Mother Shruti, Mother Shruti has not shown this to us, we may not be even able to imagine that it is there inside. Because normally what we see in this body is a combination of various material elements, mind, intelligence, false ego, and that is our greatest understanding, the largest and biggest understanding of this body. Our understanding don't go beyond than that. In normal case, even you can see with the scientists also, they have only reached up to that state that the body is combined with all the various elements and everything. But never they have searched for Krishna, God inside. Even now, they are searching for the God in the tunnel and God elsewhere. If Veda has not told us this, that the place where you have to search is not outside, it is right within, we would have never known about this. That is the beauty of the Vedas. Vedas are the only literature that is telling us, search for God inside everyone. That's where He is, not anywhere else. Other things you may give various explanations, like scientists are searching one way, Other religious tells us about different places where God is there. Somebody says it's in Kailasam, somebody says in Vaikuntham, somebody is in Govalokam. Like this, different places are spoken, and for Christian religion in another way, Islamic religion in another way. So like this, so where to search? But Vedas are telling us the right place where you have to search for Krishna is within, nowhere else. So that is where the search has to happen. And except Vedas, no one else has spoken about this. And we couldn't even imagine that. That is the place where we have to search. Aho adigambhiram bhavam yathalmakam mukti nibandhanam agamam andareena ulprekshidam abhi nashakyam. That is the commentary on that. Aho adigambhiram. This is an amazing knowledge. Bhavam yathalmakam mukti nibandhanam. It leads into liberation from this state. Agamam andareena ulprekshitam abhidashakyam. That andareena, inside only it has to be searched. That is the injunction of the Vedas. Injunction of the Vedas. If the Vedam was not there, Shruti, Vedam was not there. In fact, we can't even imagine this. And adigambhiram bhavam yathalpyam mukta nibandhanam. Agamam andareena ulprekshiptam abhinashakyam. Some things we will never be able to imagine even. That is, how will we know that Krishna has to be searched for inside? And this body, which is nothing but a combination of flesh and dead matter, urine, stool, and so many things, is filled up with this body, is filled up with all impurities things, isn't it? Mucus, air, bile and mucus, if you look at it from the Ayurvedan point of view, it is air, bile and mucus. If you look from the Sankhyam side, it is material elements, mind, intelligence, ego. And as a direct research from the scientists, they talk about it, that we see this, it's combined with all other impure substances. Blood, mucus and so on and so forth. So, and inside this body has grown out of food, isn't it? Annam or whatever grains and vegetables and milk and so many other things. From there it has grown. And it is even difficult to imagine Krishna is hiding within inside of all these things. It's not possible to know that even. And even inside this, how is that possible? That through antarmukhatvam, antarmukhatvam means by looking inwards also, how is that possible that we will be able to perceive the presence of Krishna within? How is that possible? So many things, what is lying inside this body, is things which we cannot even imagine. We cannot even imagine. So mother Shruti is breaking up all these things. If she has not shown this to us, how we will imagine this, that it is there? How will we know that it is present there? And how can anyone imagine that the presence of Krishna is within? If Bhagavad Gita has not told us this, aham alpa gudagesha sarva bhudashaya sthita aham adhyam cha madhyam cha bhutanam andam eva cha. Krishna is saying this to us. Vedam is telling us, Shruti is telling us, that the place where you will find him is inside. And Upanishads and Shruti always refers to that as the first symptom of that, as because of the awareness of our presence, our existence. This awareness. That awareness, they say, which is referred to in the Vedam as avabhodham. That avabhodham or awareness is coming from where? It's coming from Krishna's presence inside. That is why we are able to say, I exist, I am there. My presence, awareness is coming from that Krishna's presence within everybody. All other things, you cannot relate with that because they are separated from you, but awareness is always with us in Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti, all states, even after leaving the body, that carry on with us is that awareness. Is that awareness? So, this is understood by the jnanis. This is understood by the jnanis or great devotees. They know about it. That searching Krishna finally you will have to come there, you will have to go there. That's where you will find him. That's the important thing. So Vedastuti, to understand this, we'll talk about a story which happened in Kanchipuram long ago. Long means about 30-40 years ago this incident happened. Kanchipuram is full of temples, as you know, that there are so many temples. There are two places in there, Shiva Kanchi and Vishnu Kanchi. Many Shiva temples and Vishnu temples there. One side, Shiva's famous temples, Ekambareshwar, Kailasanath and others. And the other side, Varadaraja Perumal, then Devi temple, Kamakshi, and so many other temples are built there. So all the whole town is full of temples. Very, very ancient temples are present in Kanchipuram. When Chandrasekhara Saraswati was there, that the 68th Shankaracharya in Kanchi Kamakoti Pidam, who lived up to 102 years, when he was present there, one incident happened. That what happened was that one day he told somebody in the mud to go and call a grihastha, a householder who was living in Kanchipuram. And he told him to tell him to come to the mud. So this messenger from the mud went there and brought that householder to the mud. Chandrasekhara Saraswati was quite old at that time. He told him, I'm going to ask you one question, he said. Can you give us your house? We want that house. Can you give it to us, to the mud? He said. So when he said that, he was in a bit of a shock. Somebody calls you and tells you that, can you hand over your house to us? So seeing that anxiety in his mind, he told him that we will arrange an alternative accommodation for you somewhere else. Not too far, but that particular place we wanted. Can you give it to us, he said. The householder said, we'll go home, I'll think about it, discuss with my family, and then I'll come back to you, he said. Although he was very respectful to the Paramacharya, and he had all the, he didn't want to give it to him, but at the same time, considering the family circumstances and everything, he could not give a reply straight away. So he went home, he said that I will go home, discuss it with the family members, and then I'll come back to you on this, he said. So, So Brahmacharya told him, think about it seriously and then come back to me, he said. So he was very attached to that house, the householder, because his father, grandfather, great-grandfather, they all lived in that house. So naturally it's difficult that they were living in that house for so long, for so many generations. Nowadays nobody cares, isn't it? Sell this house, move there. No, let's sell that house, move somewhere else. This is a modern life. Nowhere attached to anywhere in the world. But in them days, people did have a place to live and they were very much thought about all these things before they moved away from there. So he wasn't struggling very much. He didn't know what to answer to him. So he kept the decision pending. Didn't go back with the reply. Paramacharya didn't say anything. He kept quiet about it. After a while, what happened was, he started experiencing some problems at home, this person, the householder. He had a lot of difficulties at home. Some death happened. Somebody got very ill. And a lot of problems like that happened. And he had a family, grown-up sons, daughters, everything. He was an older person. And he sent one of his sons to go to Paramacharya and to see him and to talk to him and ask him, what should I do? There are so many problems coming like this, he said at home. So he went there, went to see Paramacharya and saw him there. He circumambulated him, went there to the mat and circumambulated him, paid his obeisances there. And then he told Paramacharya that my father had sent me here and so that's why I come here. And he was going to say something. Meanwhile, he interrupted and told him, you go and tell your father to come here, he said. Told him like that. So when the old man came, Paramacharya asked him, "Will you hand over that house to the mutt now?" he said, because he realized that now he's as a sort of a change in the mind, something is happening inside. He did not understand, but we will arrange another suitable accommodation for all the members of the family elsewhere, in some another place, not far from there. And everything was arranged, and the householder straight away agreed, "Yes, we will move now," he said, because of the problems at home. When the problems happened like this, he started thinking there's something somewhere wrong. He couldn't understand anything. Paramacharya knows many things, what goes on in this world. So he kept quiet, didn't say anything. So as soon as they vacated the house and moved away to the new premises, Paramacharya said, "Let's go there now," straight away. He went there, and when he went inside the house, he looked at the house all over and started looking at every corner now and then, and so many other places he started looking there. And finally he said, that make a sketch of everything, the whole house, and bring it to the mutt, he said. So there was some architect or engineer who was with him. He made a full sketch who was from the mutt. They went there and they taken a complete map of the plan of the place and they brought it to the mutt. When he got there, got back to the mutt, he looked at the plan of the house and he pointed out a particular place where there was a toilet there, and he said, "You start digging there," he said. "You start digging here." And they arranged the people to go and break the whole toilet down and start digging there. When they dug there, straight to their surprise, they saw a bull there, a bull's form there underneath the ground of the toilet. So normally what that means is, in Shiva temples you will see a bull always. And in any big Shiva temple, if you go, there will be Shiva's carrier. The bull will be outside. Like Vishnu temple says, Garuda outside. So this bull was outside. So Paramacharya says that now if you dig further down, you will see Lord Shiva's deity there, right under the toilet. You will see the deity there, he said. So after many days of digging and opening up everything, they found a famous Shivalingam inside. Shiva's lingam inside. And as soon as it was found, Paramacharya left from the mutt with his danda in the hand, walked over to that place. And whole place is very dirty. It was a toilet, isn't it? So when he got there, that and he started telling the story of this Shivalingam, the history behind that lingam. He says, the name of this deity is Padmanabheshwara. If you go into the temple in Thiruvananthapuram, the famous Padmanabhaswamy temple, where we had all this recently, where they found so much wealth in that temple, isn't it? Different compartments they were opening up, and they said there is something like 12, 13 billion pounds worth of gold and so many other expensive things in that temple. If you go and see the deity there, Mahavishnu lying down on the Adishesha, and with the right hand of the deity is falling down like this. And there is a Shivalingam there. And on that Shivalingam, Mahavishnu offering bilua leaves onto that Shivalingam. That is the installation of the deity there. So Paramacharya says there, that deity there is the Shivalingam. Padmanabheshwara. Padmanabhas Ishwara. That said, Shiva, who is worshipped by Vishnu there, that form is this deity, he says. So where did all this come from, this understanding? Nobody knows about all these things. He says here that Ananda Palpanabha is a form which is present there, is this deity's another manifestations, he mentions there. So, and he spoke to the devotees who were present there about the history of Padmanabhaswamy temple, and also the history of this deity, everything he has spoken. But what has happened was, it is an intuition within. It's not that this is what I'm saying, that realized souls, they are Chitshakti manifest in them. From nowhere, Antaryami speaks to them from within. And they can know many things in this creation, which is unknown to us.
And that is why when that suddenly intuition came to him inside, in within, that there is such and such a Shivalingam in such and such a house underneath the toilet there, it is there. And where did this information get come to him? It didn't come from anywhere, coming from within. He didn't know anything else. So when that happened, so nobody will normally think that such a deity would be there in that, because so many generations people have lived there in that house. So it is impossible to imagine that such a Shivalingam will exist there in that conditions. This, of course, the personalities involved are so great personalities, they know what is inside out. Similarly, if Shivalingam can be there, why Krishna can't be inside us? This body, if you think about it, it is very difficult to imagine that this is the place Krishna has found to come and sit. Isn't it? When you think about this body, it's made of such filth, flesh, blood, urine, mucus, stool, everything inside is dirty, not pure in any way. And Krishna has come and sat there. Aham Alpa Gudagesha. So I'm saying that this example is to prove that it is possible. Krishna can occupy anywhere, in any situations. It does not, just like Krishna can accept any form also. Fish, tortoise, boar, all these are considered to be animals. Normally we don't want to contact with them. But Krishna takes those forms. It doesn't bother at all. Similarly, so, so in order to know these things, in this particular case, only a sage-like personality, a very saintly personality could know about this. Hrishituliyam. Hrishituliyam means like a Hrishi. A person like that only can locate such a place and find out that there was a deity there, there was what was worshipped, and the history of the deity, everything. All this is intuition. Intuition from within. So, so similarly, Shruti is saying to us, Shruti, Vedam, and the Rishis are also saying to us that this bag of urine, stool, mucus, blood and everything, if you keep digging inside this, you will, he says there, you will also find Krishna there. You will find Krishna there. See the difficulty? Normally, scientists research work is all based on material elements, isn't it? That's why they are looking in the tunnel, in moon, in Mars, and everywhere else they are going, looking that what is the truth, where is the truth. If Shruti has not told us, if Vedam has not told us, that place where you have to look for Krishna is within oneself, we would have never come to know about it, would we? Can you imagine that? How we will come to know if Krishna has not told us that he is within? We will say, we will think, then you may ask the question, well, even today, after so much research and development and everything, the scientists have still not understood where to look for him. Can you imagine that where Vedas are talking from, and Vedas where the modern science is today? They are looking in the tunnel, looking the particle, this particle, that particle. Krishna is saying to us directly and very bluntly to us, the place where you will find him is Ahamal Magudakesha. Throughout Bhagavatam, one day when we get time, I'll go through all the verses in the Bhagavatam, hundreds of verses at different places. Now and then, according to the circumstances, Shugam Brahmarshi is telling us, he's there, he's there, he's there. All the time, making us aware. And we ignore all that and we think he's somewhere else. That is where the necessity for Vedam, necessity for Shastram, Upanishads. If sages have not revealed Upanishads to us, if Krishna has not given us Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, how we will know that Krishna is to be found within? We will be searching for him somewhere else. That's why we run around all over the world, isn't it? If he is not here, he may be there, maybe he's not somewhere else. We look everywhere, but we won't find him like that. So this one important point, that searching means where to search, we have to know first, isn't it? If you don't know where to search for him, how will you search? You will be searching everywhere like we search so many other things in this world. We will go underneath the sea searching for him. We will go in the space searching for him. We will go to all other places searching for him. But we won't go here to search for him. If had Vedas not mentioned this to us. This is the importance of the Shruti Gita. Why I am coming to Shruti Gita? Shruti Gita's position is that the Shruti is telling us that, and this is an example to compare with that, that from unexpected place, completely, totally unexpected, unknown place, that's where that Shivalingam was there. And Paramacharya through intuition knew that, it was there. And he was able to, and initially there was so much resistance from the householder to give the house. And he did say that any other place, any other thing if you ask, I can give you some money to the mutt and all. He was making alternative proposals because he just didn't want to leave home due to attachment. But Paramacharya thought about this and he said that deity was there, Shivalingam is there underneath. And relationship of, because in the ancient temples, it is not based in the way like the modern world see the temple. Nowadays, how do we build the temple? We find a donation from somewhere, somebody gives us a land. Somebody gives us a land and then we build a temple there, isn't it? We call the architects, engineers, and we handed over them the money and they build the temple. And then we bring the deities from somewhere, Jaipur or somewhere else like that, and install the deities, and then we start the worship. Ancient temples were not built like that. You have to remember that. The ancient temples, the system was, great personalities, great devotees, they would have performed severe austerities and penances. Some great sage, there were so many great personalities, they would have performed great austerities and penances and a location, in a particular location, according to their concern or their sangalpam, they would have done that. That's why all the ancient temples, behind them there will be a great sage who performed austerities there. Gautama Maharshi or Vishwamitra, every old temple if you look, there will be some personality who performed penances and austerities there. Not only that, that is the importance of the person. Then, because he has performed austerities and penances in those places, that place has become purified because of his presence there, very presence there. That's a place he has realized the truth, and that's where we have, he has spent a long time, and his presence will still be there in such places, although we may not understand that. So, that is one thing. That is the importance of the person who has established, and he may have worshipped the deity there in whatever form the deity was, Narasimham or Balaram or Krishna's form, Vishnu form, Shiva form, doesn't matter which form, they may have to have worshipped that form there for a long period of time during his stay there. We are talking about the very ancient temples. So importance of the place, importance of the person. Two things. Importance of the place and importance of the person who has worshipped the deity there. In the modern world, because we are not conscious of these things, wherever we can get a land, we'll take it. Wherever we can build a temple, we'll build it. But sometimes we will end up in places where there must have had been a lot of sinful activities happened before. Is Krishna not present everywhere? Yes, Krishna is present everywhere. But when the great Mahatmas, Jnanis, great devotees, when they have executed penances, for example, people go to Badrinath, Kedarnath and all places. Why? Because we know there that there Narada Maharshi, Narayana Maharshi, Naranarayana Maharshi and many other great personalities performing their penances there. Therefore, we consider those places particularly spiritually very potent. So similarly, these temples were built in such places, and due in the flow of time, several things have happened in this world. Sometimes, like you can say, earthquakes, or due to various other reasons, things would have gone upside down and they may not have been noticed by the society anymore. People change everything in this world, continuously changing things. So, what is important is that place is an important thing where worship is performed. And similarly, the personality who has installed the deity there. That's another important thing. And also, all the deities would have a history behind it. That's another thing. Because due to their worship, and many generations of devotees who had come after that, some of them could be very prominent personalities, would have worshipped that deity in their life, in this world. So that also makes that place very glorified and auspicious. And this is particularly important as far as the Vedic tradition is concerned in the ancient times. That is how it was. So here, that is why when he mentioned the mud could have melted, the Kanchipuram mud could have built a temple somewhere else, bought a land and built the temple. But when that intuition came to him that there is a Shivalingam there, and the history of that Shivalingam has been revealed to him in his intuitions, so naturally he saw the connection with that temple, with the Padmanabhaswamy temple in Thiruvananthapuram. So he started relating with that, and he found out even everything through intuition. It was revealed to him. It is a revealed knowledge that has come to them. So therefore, you can see in such instances, to find the location of a temple, ancient temple, you needed someone who was like a sage, a rishi-like person, Rishi Tulyam. So only such a person could reveal that, isn't it? Similarly, this presence of Krishna inside us, everyone, and Krishna has put it in that way, that so that we could realize Him inside, His presence inside. That's why every living entity has been given a choice. No one is excluded. As long as there is life here, we can say Krishna is present there, inside. So, wherever we are searching for Krishna, the place where we are searching is important. Normally, our tendency is, because we think a great Mahatma comes to this world, he tells us about the spiritual life, some process he institutes, and everybody follows that, isn't it? Everybody just follows that. They don't know, many people do not know what they are doing in spiritual life, what for are they doing, and what is ultimately the goal. Some understanding is given, so based on that they start operating in this world. So here in these situations, our logic and reasoning has no value here, isn't it? By logic and reasoning you can't find out all these things. Our logic is 1 plus 1 is 2. Isn't it? But Vedam, in spiritual life, 1 plus 1 equals 1. That is the difference. In mathematics it is 1 plus 1 equals 2. But in the Shastram, 1 plus 1 equals 1. There is only 1. And that 1 is more important for us. All other things have come from the 1. In fact, if you look at mathematics also, you can see this. There is only 1 number actually, 1. You bring another one and add to it and it becomes 2, isn't it? And plus another one you add, it becomes 3. So, but the original number is only 1. And from that, everything else has come. So, when you can understand that principle, then you have escaped. Why I'm saying that is, if 1 plus 1 plus 1 is 2, plus 1 3, plus 1 4, if that understand concept is in our head, and through that concept if you see the world, you will get confused. But if you understand that there is only one, and from that all these things have come out, then you have escaped. Because then you will go back to that one, instead of going after the increase. This is what has happened to the scientist's mind. The scientist's mind is saying that I am here, and let us look at God in this way. And they start searching in one way. First they tried in the laboratory and trying to experiment with it, atoms, molecules, basic elements and things like that. They were going on in that direction for a long period of time through chemistry, isn't it? Then they have started going in another direction, that they started looking at other planets and other in the creation everywhere, in so many ways. They started looking for in the creation. And that is how this Big Bang theory and other things, they said that there must have been, these are all not very the proper way they have understood it. They said that there was a big bang. From this they have started speculating in that way. It must have come out from that. Something must have happened in the universe, and there was a huge blast, and from that so many planets have come out, and still they don't know how they were all put into a particular orbit and how they are continuously staying in that orbit with so many different planets. And they are trying to acquire more knowledge, thinking that maybe in that direction if you go, you may find the origin, where it comes from. That is another direction. Then they realized that perhaps that may not be the one. Again went back to the chemistry and started looking at the different particles of proton, electron, neutron and so many other things. And then started saying that there is one, what they call now a new particle, which they are looking at, isn't it? So they are saying that we don't know the truth yet, but this is the one which will take us to the truth. I don't know where they got that idea from. They are saying to us now that this new element, what they are talking about, boson or whatever, that they are given the name to it, they are saying that this will lead us to finding out that source from where whole thing has come out. So this is the difference, that when we see that in creation this inquiry is going on, scientists are, the amount of energy and money that is invested in this process is unlimited, isn't it? Unlimited is the amount of energy and time and money invested into this research work. Not only in Europe, in America and so many other places in the world, this is the same inquiry going on. But still that darkness is still there in us. We don't know. So that is what it is saying here, that when we accept that is this logic. This logic, 1 + 1 = 2 + 1 = 3, that may work in this world, in our material transactions and vyavaharam, it may be possible. Only for vyavaharam it will work, not for spiritual life. That has to be very clearly understood, because with the vyavaharam mind, if you come to spiritual life, we won't make it a success. Vyavaharam's logic, that is, in transactions, it works. In transactions, it will work in this world. For vyavaharam, that kind of mind and logic is okay, but not for spiritual life. That is the principle. Who mentions this? If you look into Srimad Bhagavatam, you will find this. Jataparada says this to Rahugana. If you read Bhagavatam, you will notice these things. He says here, Nasura Yogi Vyavaharamena Tattvavamarhena Samamanandi. Fifth canto, if you look into the fifth canto, 11th chapter. He begins that chapter, Brahmana Vacha. Brahmana is Bharata Maharshi. He is saying to Rahugana, Akovida Kovida Vada Vadan Vadasyado Nadi Vidam Varishtaha Nasura Yohi Vivaharamenam Tatuava Marshena Sahamanandi. Bhagavadam's one important part of Bhagavadam is this, Bharado Bhakyanam, Jarabharata's discussions with Rahugana. So he begins his instructions to Rahugana like this. He says, Akovida Kovida Vada Vadan. Although, because spiritually advanced people, they don't like this material mentality, materialistic mentality of trying to reason out everything. They don't believe in that. Because that's what he's saying here. Akovida, although you are completely ignorant, he's saying to Rahugana this. He was carrying Rahugana all this time on his shoulder, and then he came out. Rahugana was a king, isn't it? And Bharata Maharshi was Jataparada, and spiritually in a completely higher plane, so high. And here Rahugana, learned, but at the same time no realizations in him. So he's saying to Jataparada, so many things he has spoken in the last chapter, which you will notice in the previous chapter, that, and Brahmana, he asked so many questions. How Rahugana, when he saw Jadabharata, he is saying to him that he is asking this, that the way he says that, if you look into the 10th chapter, what Rahugana told him. When Rahugana looked at Jadabharata or Bharata Yogeshwara, mentions like this, that everybody has complained. The three other people who are carrying the palanquin, they complained about Jadabharata to Rahugana. Rahugana says to him, Samsargiyo Dosha, that's the fifth verse in the 10th chapter. Samsargiyo Dosha Evam Nyunam Ekasyabi Sarvesham Samsargiganam Bhavitum Arhaditi. He says here that Samsarga Dosha means, suppose you associate with someone who has got a lot of bad qualities, you will also get the same nature later on, isn't it? Same quality will happen. So he says here, Samsargiyo dosham evam nunam ekasyabi sarvesham samsargiganam bhavidum arhatiti nishchityam nishamya kripanavacho raja rahugana upasita vruddhobi nisargena balalkritam ishad uthidamanyu avispeshtam brahma tejasam jatavedasam iva rajas avratam atiraha. The three people who are carrying the palanquin, they complain to Rahugana about Jadabharata. So Rahugana is saying to Jadabharata, look, through your association, they have also become spoiled. They are also not able to do their work properly. And with an anger, he says that when he looked at Jadabharata, he found that he was balalkritam isha uttidam anyu avispeshta brahma tejasam. That when something, charcoal or firewood, when it burns, after it is finished burning, inside the fire is theirs, but externally it is covered with the ashes, isn't it? You won't know that the fire is still inside. It's still burning, it's not complete, but already it's covered with the ashes. Similarly, our Jadabharata, when he looked from outside, he looked as though he is covered in ashes. But inside that, spiritual realization is so strong that Rahugana was able to sense that inside this person there is something beyond my understanding. That much Rahugana has sensed. That's why very difficult to know Mahatmas, who Mahatmas are. Externally they may look very like ordinary people for us, because we don't have that vision to know about them. So then he says to him, although he saw that, he says to him that, but still Rahugana is not so good in sensing who this great personality is standing in front of him. So he says to him, Aho kashtam bhrada vyaktam ubari parishrando dirgham adhvanameka eva uhivan suchiram nadi piva na samhana ango jarasa chopadrudo bhavan sake no evabara ede sankathinam idi bahu vipralabdo apyavidya vihida drevya guna karmashaya so parama charama kalayabare avastuni samsthana visheshe aham mamedi anadhya arubida mithya pratyayo brahmabhuda stushnim shibhigam purvavad vaha. This was the conversation between Rahugana. Rahugana is saying to him that, my dear friend, he says, my dear brother, he says, are you very tired? Do you find it very difficult to carry this palanquin? And not only that, you don't look that, your body doesn't look that weak. You are capable of carrying these things. Not only that, you have become very old, haven't you? He says, but your friends who are with you, they are not like that. Various ways, he started making fun of Bharata Maharshi, Jadabharata. He started making fun of him. And he says to him And still, Bharata Maharshi was least affected by that, was not touched at all. He was speaking in a very insulting way to Bharata. But Bharata was not touched by anything, what was happening. Because he is seeing this body as a false thing, mithyabhudam. Mithyabhudam means shariram is not a real thing. Rahugana is talking about his body, isn't it? And he has separated himself from the body, Jadabharata. He is not caring anymore for his own body. So he says to him, and he doesn't consider I am this body and body is mine. All these thoughts have escaped from him. So, and without saying anything, he kept carrying the palanquin still. Without saying anything, he kept carrying the palanquin further again. And then, it is later that he got upset then. Rahugana saw that he was not taking any notice of what he has told. So he gets more angry and he says to him, Athapuna soshibigayam, soshibigayam, vishamagadayam, pragubida uvacham, Rahugana kimidam aretvam, jivan mrudomam, kadarthi krityam, bartrashasanam, adicharasi, pramattasya jade karomi, chikilsam, dandabani, iva janadaya, yatha prakritim swam, bhajishyasya, iti. Again, the palanquin was not carried properly. Rahugana got angry with him and says to him, you are a useless person and you are not taking my instructions very seriously. I may have to treat you properly for this kind of behavior, he says. Evam bhuhvabaddham abhibhashamanam naradevabhimanam rajasatamasanu vidhenam adena tiraskradashesha bhagavadpriyanikedam panditamaninam sa bhagavan brahmano brahmabhuda sarvabhuda sukhruda alpam yogeshara charyaya nadi vilpennamadim smayamanam iva vigadasmayam idamaha. So he says that because of the rajogunam inside, and he says, Rahugana says to him, have you really decided now to offend and insult me in this way? And Rajogunam was so powerful in him that at that decided, when seeing that Rajasic nature in him, the Brahmana without any ego started replying him to what he has spoken. And that was in the last verse chapter, you can see from verse 9 onwards right up to 25. 9 to 25, Brahmana Vacha. Then, and you can, Jadabharata has reacted to that question from Rahugana. And that is in the 10th chapter. But 11th chapter, when it started, Brahmana Vacha, Akovida Kovida Vada Vadan, Vadasyado Nadi Vidam Varishta, Nasura Yohi Vivaharamenam, Tatvavamarshena Sahamanandi. That although you are an ignorant person, he says, you are speaking like a very learned person. And he mentions here, but Nasurayohi Vivaharamenam Tatvavamarshena Sahamanandi. That is the most important part. Nasurayohi Vivaharamenam Tatvavamarshena Sahamanandi. He mentions here that normally, no intelligent person will link vivaharam with spiritual life. That is the principle. Vivaharam, if you link with spiritual life, it will end up in something else. The spiritual life is not possible. With vivaharam and spiritual life cannot go together. That is what he mentions here. Na savura yogi vivaharamenam tattvavamarshena sahamanandi. Rishis, sages, they will not mix or link vivaharam with tattvajnanam. Vivaharam means all these dealings and wheelings and wheeling and dealing in this world. That is vivaharam. And tattvajnanam is self-realization, knowledge of the soul. You cannot link these two things together. Rishis will never do that. That is the Vaidika Sampradaya, the Vaidika system is like that. What's going on in the world, that's another thing. That you cannot explain that. Only they know what they are doing. But once we come to spiritual understanding of life, to link vyavaharam with self-realization won't make any sense. It won't work. They are two different things. So, therefore, vyavaharam or transactions or dealings, wheeling and dealing in this world, that is that. That's what that is, wheeling and dealing. And that is based on ajnanam, avidya, it is. The foundation of vyavaharam is ajnanam, because it's all based on the body, isn't it? Because it's based on the body, it is all considered to be avidya. Therefore, that basic error in vyavaharam, that will not go. If you bring that into spiritual life, your spiritual life will have that basic error in spiritual life also. You can see yourself, if you look at things in a deeper level, as soon as you bring vyavaharam into spiritual life, your spiritual life will suffer. It will not work properly. If you want proper spiritual life, I'm talking about. Nowadays, people have different understanding. Many times you will see this also in modern society. We want a good material life and we want a good spiritual life as well. That's not possible. That cannot work. That's what he's saying here. Jadabharata is very straightforward about it. He's saying to Rahugana that he says, Na sura yohi vyavaharamenam tattvavamarshena sahamananti. With that one line, he has transmitted that message to him. Na sura yohi. Sura means one who is in knowledge. Tatha pashyanti surayo. Bhagavatam also mentions about that you will see in the first verses that dharma projita kaidavotra varamo narmat saranam sadam vedyam vastavamatra vastu shivadam tabatrayon mulanam Srimad Bhagavade Mahapanikrade Kimavare Ishwara Sadyohrud Yavarudhidetra Kritibi Shushrushubi Talshanal നിഗമകൽപ്പതരോർ ഗളിതം ബലം ശുഗമുഖാത് അമൃതദ്രവസംയുതം പിവത ഭാഗവതം രസമാലയം മുഹുരഹോ രസിയാഭുവി ഭാവുകാഹ. And you will see there also that in the in that first chapter itself, this word Suraya, സദാ പശ്യന്തി സൂരയോ, mentions ജന്മാദ്യസ്യ യതോന്വയാദിതരതശ്ചാർത്ഥേഷു അഭിജ്ഞസ്വരാ തേനേ ബ്രഹ്മ ഹൃദാ യ ആദികവയേ മുഹ്യന്തി യത് സൂരയ. സൂരയ മീൻസ് റിയലൈസ്ഡ് സോൾസ്, റിയലൈസ്ഡ് പേഴ്സണാലിറ്റീസ്. സൂരയ ദേ വോണ്ട് അക്സെപ്റ്റ് ദിസ് വ്യവഹാരം ആൻഡ് തത്വം, തത്വജ്ഞാനം. ദേ വോണ്ട് മിക്സ് ദീസ് ടു തിങ്സ് ടുഗദർ. Vyavaharam is Vyavaharam, Tattvajnanam is Tattvajnanam. Tattvajnanam has to remain separate from Vyavaharam. So, Suraya means that, Muhyandi yet Suraya. In the Bhagavatam, it mentions there in the first verse itself, you can see. So, the same verse here also, he mentions here that, Na Sura Yogi Vyavaharamenam Tattvavamarshena Sahamanandi. Suris are those people who have realized, who have spiritual realization. Vyavaharamenam tattvavamarshena sahamananti. They will not mix vyavaharam with tattvajnanam. Tattvavamarshena sahamananti. Tattvajnanam is tattvajnanam. Vyavaharam is vyavaharam. You cannot mix them together. They will not link them together. Because if you do that, Tattvajnanam is based on avidya. Avidya and vidya you can't mix. You can't, both of them cannot exist the same time. Isn't it? They can't exist together. Avidya and vidya together can't exist. Either it has to be vidya or it has to be avidya. Either it has to be jnanam or it has to be ajnanam. Vyavaharam is ajnanam. Tattvajnanam is vidya, is knowledge. Vyavaharam is ignorance. Vyavaharam comes from ignorance. When the ignorance increases, vyavaharam increases. That you can see in the world. Wherever there is deep ignorance, the vyavaharam will be the peak there. Is it not? Very scientifically advanced and technologically advanced places. Ajnanam is very deep. Avidya is very deep. Isn't it? You know that more advanced and more fear of material existence and more attachment to the body, more fear of enemy, more eating, sleeping, mating, defending. All this is ajnanam it is, based on the body. Is it not? From the spiritual point of view, it's all ajnanam. So, more vyavaharam goes on, more ajnanam or avidya comes from that. And wherever, and that ajnanam avidya, you can't bring that and make it, mix it with the self-realization and spiritual life. If you do that, it will not, it will completely destroy everything. Destroy everything. So, and not only that, you can see this, when one is fully realized, one who is completely understood that he is the soul and he is not this body, for him, vyavaharam is not possible. Vyavaharam is not possible. Because, because you can see, like, you see the difficulty. When you are applying for, say, passport or anything, you are giving an application for the passport. You can't mention the passport, I am a spirit soul, can you? You will have to change the passport, like they will ask you so many details. You have to give a name. Name is for what? From the body. From the body. And if, based on the varnashram, what varnam, what ashram, all these kind of questions they can ask in the application forms, isn't it? In other words, what they are expecting is, from you, you have to define yourself. Date of birth, again related to the body. The name referring to the body, isn't it? So, while you are sitting in this material world, you have to define yourself, what you are. Otherwise, which is vyavaharam? You have to define yourself. And that definition, place of birth, where you are born, the date of birth, citizen, and they will also ask you what descent you are, Asian, your ethnicity, Chinese or black or white or Caribbean or white British or white black British, or all kinds of things they ask you in the form when you apply for the passport or anything like that in this world. You apply for a job also, they will ask you all these things. And all sorts of things like that. So in vyavaharam, all these things are important because you have to define yourself in this world, isn't it? So here, that's what he says here. You cannot, that is all ajnanam. You have to remember that. It's all ajnanam. That ajnanam, you cannot join that with paramarthiyam. Spiritual life is paramarthiyam, isn't it? Paramarthiyam means it's absolute. That your pure identity, that is. And it has nothing to do with any of these bodily designations and bodily identities. What is asked in the form. What is asked in the form. Now that this ajnanam comes everywhere, ajnanam comes to temples also, ajnanam comes everywhere, and then the temples also start bringing forms and start asking you to fill it in. All kinds of things goes on in this way. So there is a big shift. We are thinking we are making spiritual progress, but actually our avidya is increasing inside. Ajnanam is increasing inside, and we are culturing that ajnanam more and more, thinking that it's all advancement in the spiritual life. It has nothing to do with spiritual life. It's only the avidya is increasing inside. Avidya is increasing inside. So, though, because spiritual realization is a place of shanti. It's a place of shanti. And that is why Vedam is saying to us, or the spiritual knowledge is giving to us, that it is very difficult to define these things. Therefore, nigamam tasmal vedasya vedada. If you look into the definition of the Vedam, what is Vedam? There are definitions of that Vedic knowledge. Yastu upayo na vidyate evam vadandi vedena tasmal vedasya vedada. What you cannot be defined by normally by material terminologies, that knowledge which cannot be realized by material means, which is beyond, tasmal vedasya vedada. It is referred to as Vedam. It is referred to as Vedam. Tasmal vedasya vedada. So, that Vedam, the name itself has come, yastu upayo na vidyate. There is no upayam or technique by which you can get to know this truth. The knowledge of the soul, or realization of the soul. It's not possible to realize it, this truth, by any means. There is no upayam, there is no way you can find it. Evam vadandi vedena tasmal ve pratyakshena anumityana. Pratyaksham means direct perception. Anumanam means inference. So Rigvedam, for example, it mentions this. Pratyakshena animiteva yastupayo na vidyade evam vadandi vedena tasmal vedasya vedada. That is how about Vedam it is spoken. Vedam's position is like that. What you cannot get by direct perception. For example, the scientific experience, scientific experiments they are performing there is largely based on direct perception, isn't it? To some extent, it is based on anumanam, inference. Science follows these two, pratyaksham and anumanam. That is their process. So, Rigvedam, rishis have told us, pratyakshena animityana, either by pratyaksham or by anumanam, either by direct perception or by inference, yastupayo na vidyade, neither of them can give you a process by which to know the truth. Evam vadandi vedena tasmal vedasya vedada. Vedam is directing us to that route which is neither through direct perception nor by inference. Rishis have told us this from the very beginning so that they do not want that anybody should get confused with that process and with the modern pratyaksham anumanam process. Therefore, rishis never gave any importance to direct perception or to anumanam, inference. They have no value for it. Because it is too subtle, the subject matter is too subtle. It is not possible because pratyaksham anumanam is based on what? Pratyaksham is based on our eyes, ears, senses, isn't it? Pratyaksham, direct perception, is all based on senses. Anumanam is based on what? Mind and intelligence. They are finished. That's it. That's all it is. So anything that's coming from the science, modern science, or anything that where you use the mind and intelligence and your senses, that's finished with the science. Pratyaksham Anumanam. So Vedas are saying to us, these two route, if you follow, Pratyaksham and Anumanam, there finishes everything. That part, Vyavaharam is all in that. Everything that happens through these two is Vyavaharam. Ajnanam, avidya it is. Yastu upayona vidyade, that won't help you in spiritual life. They have found this out long ago, before all what we are talking about. We are still doing the same thing to find the truth, but it's not possible, they are saying. Yastu upayona vidyade evam vadandi vedena tasmal vedasya vedada. Vedam is saying to us, don't go in that route, you won't get to know the truth from there, from that process. They have warned us from the very beginning, first telling us that, after that they are telling all other things. So, that is how the Vedic process is. And keeping all this in the background, so this Vedam is in this situation. That is why the question from Parikshit, when we begin this chapter, is a very interesting question. If you look into that chapter 87, what he mentions here is, Brahmam he mentions here, Shuka Brahmarshi is going to answer that question. Parikshit is asking that question to Sukadeva Goswami. He says to him that in the 87th chapter, Brahmam, he says, it is very difficult to talk about that, about Brahmam, the truth, with the mouth. With the mouth, you can't express that, what it means. And because what it is, he says here, it is anirdeshyam. Anirdeshyam. Anirdeshyam means you can't define it. Adrishtam, you can't see it either. Avyavaharam, you can't bring that into transactions either. And then aprapyam, you can't reach there. It's not something separately where you can go and get there. Alakshanam, and you cannot explain that with any symptoms of that. Lakshanam. Achindyam. Achindyam means you can't even think about it with your mind and intelligence. Anirdeshyam. All these things are spoken about Brahman, about the truth in the Shruti, in the Vedam. It is defined it in this way. So, Prapanchopashamam, Ekalpa Pratyasaram. In this way, you can only point out to that to some extent, but you cannot clearly speak about this. And eventually what do? Not this, not this, not this. He keeps saying, negate everything. If when it is like that, Parikshit is asking Shuka Brahmarshi, when everything is like this as far as the truth is concerned, what does that mean? Parikshit understands the difficulty. He is saying to Shuka Brahmarshi that it is difficult to talk about the truth. It is difficult to explain that to somebody. It is difficult to do any vyavaharam with that truth. It is difficult to reach that truth, and it is difficult to define that truth, and it is difficult to realize that truth with the senses, he is saying. What he is saying is, with the senses and the mind intelligence. This is what we have got, isn't it? Subtle body and our gross senses, what we have got. With them, you can't get to know this truth. And when it is like that, Parikshit is asking this question, how does one come to realize the truth then? That is his question. And that is that first verse. Parikshit vacham brahman brahmanya nirdeshya nirgune gunavrtaye katham charandi shudaya sakshal sadasada pare. The first verse in the 87th chapter. 87th chapter, the first verse. Parikshit vacham, Parikshit's question. Brahman brahmanya nirdeshye nirgune gunavrtayaha katham charandi shutayaha sakshal sadasada pare. That everything in the creation is three modes of material nature, isn't it? Three modes of material nature in everything. Sattvam, rajas, tamas. And he mentions here the words of Shruti also. Is it nirgunam, beyond the three modes of material nature? And how is it possible that the supreme truth Brahman, how can you realize this Brahman? Brahman, brahmanya nirdeshye nirgune gunavrtaya. Gunavrti, because in everything three modes of material nature is present. Krishna mentions that, isn't it? There is no place here in this creation where there is no three modes of material nature. Including our mind and intelligence, there is modes of material nature. Sattvam, rajas, tama, igrati, Krishna mentions that. If you look into the, 11th canto, you will see Krishna begins one chapter with that. 13th chapter. Shri Bhagavan Vacha, what did he say? Sattvam, rajas, tama, iti, gunam, buddheya, na chalpana. The only place where the three modes of material nature are not present is the soul. Is the soul. Everywhere else, these three modes of material nature is present. So, he mentions there, and sometimes sattvagunam is predominating, sometimes rajogunam is predominating, sometimes tamogunam is predominant in different situations. So, because it is like that, he is addressing here, addressing Brahman. Parikshit is calling Shuka Brahmarshi as Brahman. Brahman. He's calling him as Brahman. And because why? He is Brahmajnani. Brahmavit Brahmaiva Bhavadi. There is a statement in the Upanishads. Brahmavit Brahmaiva Bhavadi. That means if you are Brahman realized, you become Brahman. Once you have realized the truth, you become that. Not like any other material knowledge. Physics, chemistry and all you study, but you don't become physics or you don't become chemistry. But Brahman, when you realize Brahman, you become Brahman. That is the interesting thing. Brahmavit Brahmaiva Bhavati. That is why Parikshit is calling him Brahman. Hey Brahman. Suppose somebody calls us, hey Brahman, we won't know anything, would we? We'll think it's another name given. No, it is realization. Because knowledge is Brahman. Prajnanam Brahman. That is our definition. Not the body of Shuka Brahmarshi is Brahman. The knowledge that personifies there in that body, that is Brahman. That is what is addressed as Brahman. For them, body is not important. It is because of only, because he has become Brahman. When you have become Brahman, you are conscious of everything, isn't it? That is why Sudha Goswami mentioned to Shuka Brahmarshi in the beginning. Remember? that you have become, you are Brahman, he is Brahman, therefore he can enter anywhere to anybody's heart and know what is going on in anybody, everyone. He has that capacity. He is that. He is conscious of everyone, everywhere in the world, whole creation. He is conscious of that. Shukha Brahmarshi. So, therefore he is called Brahmarshi, and here he is called as Brahman, Brahmajnani. In the Bhagavatam you will notice when Yaswane Bhavam Akhila Shrutisare Megam Adhyalpadivam Aditi Tirshadam Tamondham Samsarinam Karunayaha Purana Guhyam Tam Vyasa Sunam Upayami Guru Muninam. In there, yes, Swanubhavam. What is that Swanubhavam? His own realization. Yes, Swanubhavam, what did he realize? Akhila Shrutisare Megam. He has realized the message of the Vedam, Upanishads, everything. Who? Shukha Brahmarshi. Shrutisare Megam. Adhyalpa Deepam is the torchlight, shining knowledge. He didn't say Adhyalpa Deepam, he is called. Not the person, Shukha Brahmarshi. But he's not a person anymore. That is what you have to know. He's not a person anymore. It's a knowledge, traveling knowledge it is. Knowledge in that body, it is moving. Adhyalma Deepam. Atiti Tirshadam Tamam Andham. He has crossed beyond the Tamandham, Tamasa, or the blind darkness where we are in today. We are in that blind darkness at the moment. We don't know what we are. We don't know why we are here. We don't know where what we have to do. Nothing is known to us. Therefore, Tamandham. Therefore, because he is like that, he has crossed beyond than that. Samsarinam Karunayaha Purana Guhyam. Because of his overriding compassion for materially absorbed people, out of his Karunyam or mercy, he gave us Srimad Bhagavatam. Purana Guhyam Tam Vyasa Sunam Upayami Guru Muninam. You will see that in the first canto, in the second chapter, isn't it? Tam Vyasa Sunam Upayami Guru Muninam. So, in this third verse, in the second chapter, third verse, Eswanibhava Mahila Shrutisaramegam Adhyalpa Deepam Aditi Tirshadam Tamondam Samsarinam Karunayaha Purana Guhyam Tam Vyasa Sunam Upayami Guru Muninam. Prior to that, he mentions Yam Pravrajandam Anupedam Apeta Kritiam Dwaipayeno Viraha Kadaram Ajuhava Putredi Dan Maidaya Taravobhinedu Tam Sarva Bhuda Hridayam. That Sarva Bhuda Hridayam is why he is called Brahman. He is able to be in the heart of everyone. Sarva Bhuda Hridayam. That state, that is why he was called Brahman here. So he calls here, Parikshit is calling him Brahman. And you are realized with the Brahman, and one who has realized Brahman, he becomes Brahman. He becomes Brahman. So you are the only person who can clarify this doubt in me, he says to him. Then he says, mentions here that it is not possible to explain this thing called Brahman. What is Brahman means? Therefore, all the great realized personalities, they talk about Brahman in silence. They don't talk about silence anything. They teach in silence. They teach Brahman in silence. Through silence, they convey the message. Silence is more powerful in communication than speaking through the words. Everything what we understand is in the wrong way when we come to spiritual life. Normally we think if we speak a lot about one particular topic, we will get the message through, isn't it? People ask, why? There it's mind and intelligence working. So when we are on the platform of the mind and intelligence, the speaker has to speak about so many things to explain a particular topic. In spiritual life, because mind and intelligence has no involvement, silence is the process of transmitting the message. You will see this in Brahma Sutram, it is discussed how it happens. There is a chapter in the Brahma Sutram which is known as Ubhayalinga Adhikaranam. You can look at that chapter, you will see there Ubhayalinga Adhikaranam, it is called. And there the disciple goes to the spiritual master. Disciple goes to the spiritual master. And he says to him that please instruct me about Brahmam. He says, the disciple says to the spiritual master. So the spiritual master says to him, you stay with me for a year. You stay with me for a year. And he sat with him for one whole year. Who? The disciple sat with the spiritual master for one whole year. And Guru never said one thing to the disciple. After a year, the disciple asked him, you have not, 1 year, you have not instructed me anything. At that time, Guru, in that moment, Guru is saying to the disciple, Bhumahi ghalam tvam tu na vijanasi, he says. He says, I was kept on instructing him, but you didn't understand. That's what he said. The Guru says to the disciple, all this whole year, I kept on, this is in the Upanishads, this thing comes. That Ubailinghadikaranam also mentions the same thing. It's also there in the Upanishads. That uninterrupted, he says, the whole 1 year I was kept on instructing you through silence. But you didn't get it. He didn't get it. What he call it says uninterrupted eloquence. Uninterrupted eloquence, continuously instructions. So, normally when you are talking, there is a beginning and an end, isn't it? You start with something and then you end with something else. Whereas here, it was unending, continuously it was being given. The message was given. But you didn't understand. Ameneiva brahma pravamcha and without avachaneneiva brahma pravacha. Avachaneneiva means without any vachanam. Without any speaking, Brahmam was transmitted. Brahmam was transmitted in silence. Silence. Many times you will see self-realized souls in that state. They will not answer anything. When you ask questions, they will not answer. They will keep quiet. They won't say anything. Because you may think that they are not answering. Why they are not answering? That is what we, because this is very strong in the modern world, isn't it? We have this bad habit that for every question asked, I must get an answer. This is in our head very strongly because there is no subtlety inside. That's where it's coming from. That subtle way of receiving knowledge is completely lost. The only way of receiving realization now is through gross level. Through the mind and the, but whereas ability to think or ability to absorb in a subtle level and ability to come to a understanding from a subtle point of view is not there. Therefore this problem. But many times you will see when, and we are talking about the truth, absolute truth, which cannot be defined in any way, which cannot be defined in any way. So therefore, all great personalities, they communicate through silence. They communicate through silence. Because it is anirdesha vastu. Anirdesha means, it's not something that you can bring within your capacity of word power. Through the word power. It's not something that's possible to bring it through word power. But we keep insisting that it should be brought within the word power. That's why we are thinking like that, isn't it? When many, this particular chapter, is the difficulty is this, that it is so subtle, everything that's spoken in this chapter. And we will try to understand this through our mind and intelligence, and then the problem will start with that. You ask so any devotee who have, they all got Krishna book, isn't it? Krishna book every devotee has got. And they all have read that 87th chapter. And you ask them what they have understood. They will say, Prabhupada says like this, and they will read out the chapter from the book. They will say from this chapter 87, they will start reading out, Prabhupada said like this, so that's what they have understood. Prabhupada said, they will say. But what have they understood, if you ask them, that there will be nothing, because that chapter is like that. Prayers by personified Vedas. Well, first of all, you have to know what is this personified Vedas, isn't it? That is the English translation, remember that. In the Bhagavatam, the title is Shruti Gita, it is. Shruti, that's all it is said. It didn't say personified or anything. But to make us understand, we can only understand if it is spoken that way. Otherwise, we won't understand. So there, the problem is that Brahman is a very difficult thing to define, as I said before, difficult thing to grasp, difficult thing to define, because of the presence of the modes of nature. Therefore, only a Brahman realized person will know what is Brahman. That is the conclusion. Brahman, he has to be Brahman realized. Otherwise, he won't know what Brahman is. You can't speak and explain it to somebody. Whereas we want everything explained to us properly. Is it not? So that's where this problem is coming from. And that is why in this first verse, he says to him, how to express that with the words. He is expressing his limitation. Parikshit is also saying the same thing. Brahman, Brahmanya Nirdeshe Nirgune Gunavrutaye. First of all, Brahman is Nirgunam, isn't it? Nirgunam means three modes of material nature cannot touch. It's not there in Brahman. It's beyond the three modes of nature. And we are always in the Gunavrutti, Gunavrutaya. All, even what we speak is under three modes of material nature. What we eat is under three modes of material nature. Everything under modes of nature. Everything in this creation is under modes of nature. So when it is like that, how can we understand something which is not under the modes of nature? Nirgunam. That's what he is saying. Sattvam, Rajasa, Tamasa. Three modes of material nature will not touch Brahman. Will not touch Brahman. And any word what you use to express Brahman is also under the three modes of material nature. The words are under modes of nature, isn't it? Every word what we use is also under the three modes of material nature. So, how will you get there with these words? That is why he is asking there, Katham Charandi Shrutayaha, he says there. See that in the first verse? Katham Charandi Shrutayaha. How will the words will reach Shruti? How will the words of Shruti, how will the words of Shruti will reach Brahman? He's asking that question. It's a very valid question, isn't it? Katham Charandi Shrutayaha. The words of Shruti, because Shruti is also words as far as we know. It's also words. Shruti is also words, isn't it? Only thing is, it is in Sanskrit, but it is also words at the end. So he's asking, Katham Charandi Shrutayaha. How can Shruti able to explain Brahman? That is the question. How can Shruti explain Brahman? Brahman is beyond all these things. Three modes of material nature can't get to Brahman, because Brahman is transcending the three modes of material nature. Shruti is also words, again cannot reach words. It's beyond the words and the mind. It's beyond it. How will you get there? Sakshal Sadasadatpare, he says here that, so Katham Charandi Shrutayaha Anuchare Nigamaha. That is the answer for that. Anuchare Nigamaha. It is going to come later. You'll see this word. Anuchare Nigamaha. Later it will come. So he mentions here that Shudhigida, it says, Katham Charandi Shrutayaha, and later on, it's going to say in Shruti Gita, Anuchare Nigamaha. When you start answering that question, you will see that's coming later in the one of the verses. We'll find Anuchare Shrutayaha. Anuchare Nigamaha. How Vedam, which is also words, has become a cause for knowledge of the self or self-realization. That is the question. Have you understood the question now? What it is? Question is this. That Vedam is also words, isn't it? And everything is modes of nature. Sattvam, Rajasa, Tamasa. And Shruti, Vedam, is also words. So how will Vedam, which is made of words, Shruti, will that take us to the truth Brahman? To the truth Brahman. That is the question. Shukha Brahmarshi mentions there, in the second verse if you look, that is the question, the answer. Buddhi, he says, Shri Shukha Uvacha, Buddhi Indriyam Mana Pranan Jananam Asrajal Prabhu
മാത്രാർത്ഥം ച ഭവാർത്ഥം ച ആത്മനേ അകൽപ്പനായ ച. ഹി സേസ് ബുദ്ധി, ഇന്ദ്രിയം, മനസ്സ്, പ്രാണൻ, ഓൾ ഓഫ് ദം, ദീസ് തിങ്സ് വേർ ക്രിയേറ്റഡ് ജനാനാം അസൃജൽ പ്രഭു. ശുഗബ്രഹ്മർഷി സേസ് ദർ, ഇൻ ഓർഡർ ഫോർ അസ് ടു ഹാവ് റിലിജിയോസിറ്റി, ധർമ്മം, അർത്ഥം, കാമം, മോക്ഷം, ഇൻ ഓർഡർ ടു ഗെറ്റ് ദാറ്റ് കൃഷ്ണ ഹാസ് ഗിവൺ ഇൻ്റലിജൻസ്, സെൻസസ്, മൈൻഡ് ആൻഡ് പ്രാണൻ. ഫോർ തിങ്സ്, ബുദ്ധി, മൈൻഡ്, ഇൻ്റലിജൻസ്, മൈൻഡ് ഇൻ്റലിജൻസ്, സെൻസസ് ആൻഡ് ദ ലൈഫ് എയർ, പ്രാണൻ, ദർ ഓൾ ക്രിയേറ്റഡ് ഫോർ അസ് ഇൻ ഓർഡർ ദാറ്റ് ഫോർ അസ് ടു ഗോ ഇൻ ടുവേർഡ്സ് റിലിജിയോസിറ്റി, ഇക്കോണമിക് ഡെവലപ്മെൻറ്റ്, സെൻസ് ക്ലാരിഫിക്കേഷൻ ആൻഡ് ഫൈനലി ഫോർ ലിബറേഷൻ, ഫോർ ദാറ്റ് പർപ്പസ്. സോ മാത്രാർത്ഥം ച, ഹി സേസ് ഹിയർ, മാത്രാർത്ഥം ച ഭവാർത്ഥം ച ആത്മനി അകൽപ്പനായ ച. ഇറ്റ്സ് വെരി ഡിഫിക്കൾട്ട് ടു അണ്ടർസ്റ്റാൻഡ് ദാറ്റ് സ്റ്റേറ്റ്മെൻറ്റ്. യു ലുക്ക് ഇൻ ടു എനി കമൻട്രി, യു വിൽ സി ഇറ്റ്സ് വെരി ഡിഫിക്കൾട്ട് തിങ് വേർഡ് ദാറ്റ് മാത്രാർത്ഥം ച ഭവാർത്ഥം ച ആത്മനി അകൽപ്പനായ ച. ബിക്കോസ് ദാറ്റ് സെൻറ്റൻസ് മാത്രാർത്ഥം ച ഭവാർത്ഥം ച ആത്മനി അകൽപ്പനായ ച, ഓ ഇറ്റ് ഈസ് സമാധി ഭാഷ. സമാധി ഭാഷ മീൻസ് ഇറ്റ് ഈസ് ടു ബി അണ്ടർസ്റ്റുഡ് ബൈ റിയലൈസ്ഡ് പേഴ്സൺസ് ഓൺലി. ദാറ്റ് ഈസ് ദി ഡിഫിക്കൽട്ടി വിത്ത് ദാറ്റ് സെൻറ്റൻസ്. ജനറലി യു ക്യാൻ റൈറ്റ് സംതിങ് ആൻഡ് യു നോ ലൈക്ക് യു ഇൻ ദി ഇൻ ദി യു വിൽ സീ ദാറ്റ് സോ മെനി പീപ്പിൾ ഹാവ് ഗിവൺ കമൻട്രി ഓൺ ദാറ്റ് പെർട്ടിക്കുലർ പാർട്ട് ഓഫ് ദ വേഴ്സ്. ബട്ട് മാത്രാർത്ഥം ച ഭവാർത്ഥം ച ആത്മനി അകൽപ്പനായ ച, you can derive many meanings from that, but the very considered opinion from the acharyas are that that is only can be understood properly when you are realized the truth. That statement matrartham cha bhavartham cha, you will see the translation mentions there matrartham cha bhavartham cha almane agalpanaya cha. In other words, translation wise because സമാധി ഭാഷ, ഇറ്റ് ഈസ് നോൺ എ സമാധി ഭാഷ. യു വിൽ നോ ദിസ് ദാറ്റ് ദി ഇൻ ദി വല്ലഭാചാര്യ ട്രഡീഷൻ, ഇൻ ദി വല്ലഭാചാര്യ പുഷ്ടിമാർഗം, ഓർ ദി കോളിംഗ് ദ ശ്രീമൽ ഭാഗവതം ഈസ് കോൾഡ് എ സമാധി ഭാഷ. ദാറ്റ്സ് ഹൗ ദേ കോൾ ഭാഗവതം, സമാധി ഭാഷ. പുഷ്ടിമാർഗം ദ അഡ്രസ് ഭാഗവതം സമാധി ഭാഷ. സമാധി ഭാഷ ഓൺലി ഇൻ സമാധി ദ മീനിങ് ഓഫ് ദാറ്റ് സെൻറ്റൻസ് വിൽ ബി ക്ലിയർ. What is meant by that? Only in samadhi state you can understand. They are also saying the same thing. So only when Srimad Bhagavatam reveals that realization to us, then only that verse will be properly understood. The whole words, buddhi indriya mana prana jananam asajal prabhu. The first part is relatively not too difficult directly if you take the meaning. But the second part, matrartham cha bhavartham cha almane agalpanaya cha, that is the part more difficult. So if you look into Prabhupada has given the prayers of personified Vedas, if you look into that chapter also, you will see here that What it is this chapter, what is given here is actually a summary. Summary means Prabhupada has not gone as a verse by verse meaning, but rather taken the whole summary and presented it to get a feel for the chapter. It's very difficult actually to put it through the verse by verse, particularly this chapter, to verse by verse to go through and to explain it, because it is a samadhi bhasha. It is in samadhi you will understand this chapter. So you will see many places that if you look into it, that The prayer of the Vedas personified illustrates that the Vedas are meant for helping the conditioned souls to understand Krishna. All the Shrutis or personified Vedas offered glories to the Lord again and again, singing Jaya Jaya. This indicates that the Lord is praised for His glories. Of all His glories, the most important is His causeless mercy upon the conditioned souls in reclaiming them from the clutches of Maya. So here, before we go back into these details, while bringing this introduction, before Shruti Gita begins, he mentions there, the question was asked. You can see in the first paragraph, Prabhupada mentions there, since the Vedic knowledge generally deals with the subject matter of the three qualities of the material world, how then can it approach the subject matter of transcendence, which is beyond the approach of the three material modes? Since the mind is material and the vibration of words is a material sound, how can the Vedic knowledge expressing by material sound the thoughts of the mind approach transcendence? Description of a subject matter necessitates describing its source of emanation, its quality and its activity. Such description can be possible only by thinking with the material mind and by vibrating material words. Although Brahman or the Absolute Truth has no material qualities, our power of speaking does not go beyond the material qualities. How then can Brahman, the Absolute Truth, be described by your words? I do not see how it is possible to understand the transcendence from such expressions of material sound. This was the question, isn't it? So purpose of King Parikshit's inquiring was to ascertain from Sukadeva Goswami whether the Vedas ultimately describe the truth as personal or impersonal. Understanding the Absolute Truth progresses in three features: impersonal Brahman, Paramatma, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. And so it has gone like that, but it hasn't still explained this one verse, Matrarthancha Bhavarthancha Alpani Agalpanaja, because it is a difficult thing that, as Vallabhacharya's commentary also mentions this, Subhodini says this, because completely Samadhi Bhasha. It is a Samadhi Bhasha. So therefore, only in Samadhi state, the meaning will be, it will be properly experienced, this thing. So, or Srimad Bhagavatam, when one is performing Upasana for Bhagavatam, only if Bhagavatam reveals that realization to us, we will understand. Otherwise, if you look into the commentaries of the Acharyas, and other related commentaries on that, what they call it as Tika, even then you will not get to know what is meant by that statement. So the difficulty that they will say like this, they call it Tika. If you write one Tika, to understand that Tika, you need another Tika from that. So Tika is not working with these verses. That's the difficulty. So sometimes to understand one commentary, you may need another commentary to understand that. That is quite common in the whole Vedic tradition. It is like that. Many things, because Vedam is like that, Samadhi Bhasha, and also the complexity of the verses. Therefore, it is very difficult. So once when you understand a lot of things, then you will get confused with initially what has been spoken. So through Vyakhyanam, commentary, it is not possible to understand this. The reason for that is, it is not to be understood by the mind. See, everything, what we are trying to do, is we are trying to understand things through the mind and intelligence, isn't it? And in order to experience this, we need to have that special vision, which is on a much more a deeper level than the mind and the intelligence. That is what in Bhagavatam calls it as Pratyabhijna. Pratyabhijna means that recognition inside, that only those who have that capacity to go in a very, very subtle level will understand the
message that is being spoken in that verse. So that is why that's why it mentions there that just like when you when they generate fire for the sacrifices, they constantly rub the two pieces of wood, and from there the fire is generated. In a similar way, it has to mind, intelligence, senses, pranam, all these things is already created. All of us have got that, isn't it? It has appeared, it has manifested in us. And why? Matrarthancha bhavarthancha. That means these things have already manifested. Which one? The body, the mind, intelligence, senses, everything has already manifested. It's already manifested. Therefore, when we churn the fire, when they rub the wood to generate fire, it takes a long time sometimes to generate that fire, and the fire has to be generated only in that way. Similarly, mind, intelligence, senses, mind and life air, all of them Krishna has created, already created, isn't it? And it has appeared and it has manifested in all of us. And matrarthancha bhavarthancha, because all those things what Krishna has given now, which has manifested already, that means this body, mind, intelligence, senses, everything, it's only good for knowing the things in this world. Knowing the things in this world, you can measure the things. Measure means you can understand them. For example, with the eyes you can see a particular object. So there is a mango. Eyes can see the mango, and tongue can taste the mango, and we can discuss about the words can talk about the mango. So different senses can do certain functions in relationship with the things in this world. So here it says here, only the objects in this world, you can measure them with these things, with this, what Krishna has provided us at the moment. With the eyes, the form, with the ears, the sound, with the nose, the smell, with the tongue, the taste, in this way. Then bhavarthancha, and what happens that way? The way it is created is like this, that you can enjoy all these things in this world with what Krishna has given us, which is body, mind, intelligence and senses. And then at the end, matrarthancha bhavarthancha. Afterwards, bhavam. Bhavarthancha means that you have to come back again and continue. That's how we are at the moment, isn't it? We are not finished with this. We will come here in ignorance. We will do various things with the body, mind, intelligence, senses, everything. I will say something about this now, because we have misunderstood all these things. That's why I'm saying. In temples we do this. Actually, we shouldn't go that far, because that living entity also has an opportunity to hear Bhagavatam. We should not deny that. It's a wrong thing we are doing. We are thinking that we may step over or kill. All you have to do is to remove it to some side. Let it stay there. Spiritual life, we think we are understanding. The reality is that we are not understanding. That may understand better. That is how spiritual life is. If we get thinking that we are all hearing, we are understanding, we may not understand. That's why this is in the first few days in spiritual life, we will do all these things. In the temple also, constantly this is going on. People are busy, they will see one living entity somewhere, everybody picks it up, throw it out, thinking that is all, we are so sensitive to non-violence. Non-violence is not all this. This is misunderstanding. Non-violence is that you don't go deliberately go in this living, jivo jivasi jivanam. One living entity is put to another living entity. What can we do about it? That's how world is created. Krishna mentions that, isn't it? Falguni mahadam tatra jivo jivasi jivanam in the Bhagavadam mentions like that. So we don't have to deliberately go and kill another living entity, but in the process of driving, walking, and always living entities will get killed. That's unavoidable. You can't do anything about it. So while hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, if another living entity is also, you don't know who is in what form has come. That is our lack of vision. We are thinking, seeing the body and thinking that person is in that body, you won't understand Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam has to be understood. Remember, once it so happened that Ramana Maharshi used to speak to the monkeys and the cows and the squirrels and everything. Somebody asked him that you are talking to all these people. He said to them, I have been talking to you. What difference has it made? He said. So we should know ourselves well first. Because we misunderstand things and do all these kind of things, thinking that this is all spiritual life. There is nothing to do with spiritual life. This is all ignorance it is, complete ajnanam it is. So, sorry to say this, but I have to say this, otherwise it is not proper also. We will keep on doing the same thing again and again. So, matrarthancha bhavarthancha almane agalpanayacha. Krishna, Shukha Brahmarshi is saying here that matrarthancha bhavarthancha. Such an important topic this is. It's so difficult to understand it also. And the commentaries are saying here that shariram, material body, mind, intelligence, senses, all these things Krishna has given us. Try to understand where we are at the moment. We have got all these things and there is only certain things you can do with these things, isn't it? With body, mind, intelligence and ego, or senses, or pranan, what can you do? Up to certain things you can function in this world. Afterwards, you have to leave everything. And then you have to come back here and start doing the same thing again. That is what that bhavartham means. Bhavartham cha. Matrartham cha, bhavartham cha, almane agalpanaye cha, says Shukha Brahmarshi, says here. That it's a difficult thing to explain that. He says here that when you go in that way, that what will happen is punarabhi jananam, punarabhi maranam. Again birth, again death. Again birth, again death. And we are in this cycle already. You have to remember you are on this wheel. We are sitting on a wheel like that. And sitting in that wheel under the three modes of material nature, continuously getting recycled again and again from one body to another and one species to another, we are trying to understand the truth. Truth, understand the truth. That is what the difficulty is saying here. So that is what is called the bhavam. Bhava means that. Bhavartham cha. Matrartham cha, bhavartham cha. So what is this bhava means? Bhava means we have this strong. Because of this recycling going on with us all the time, while we are in this body, we have a difficult situation that we want to become something tomorrow. We want to become something tomorrow. Everybody engages in spiritual life with this understanding, isn't it? I am going to become something tomorrow. Anyone who does sadhana, you ask this question to them, they will tell you that I'm chanting my rounds for the last 40 years and I have done service all my life and I'm hoping that I will leave my body and go back to the spiritual world, or I will, at least if I don't go to the spiritual world, wherever, nobody will say like this that wherever I go doesn't matter. No, inside desire is very much there that after leaving the body they do want to go to spiritual world, or they do want to go to higher planets. They don't want to come back here. That's why it is said like that. But, so what is understanding there? Understanding is this, that I leave this body and I will get somewhere else in another body and I will continue to exist in that way, in a higher position. So, that means you want to become something later. Want to become something later. So, but with all this, bhavartham cha, almane agalpanaye cha, you won't understand the soul, what the soul is. Soul you won't understand with that concept inside. That understanding like this, that leaving this body, I will get another body later. You are thinking now, I leave this body, I'll get a spiritual body somewhere. Some understanding like that, isn't it? In other words, I'm going to become something. That is called bhavam. Bhava means that. Bhavartham cha. Matrartham cha, bhavartham cha, almane akalpanaya cha. He says, Atma will not be known by any of those perceptions. Any of those perceptions. So, because none of them, if you want to define the soul also, to know the soul or to assimilate or to understand that, it will not help. Then, when will it help? Shruti says, when everything becomes quiet. Nischalam. If you look into Kathopanishad, you will see there a statement about this. In Kathopanishad, we'll come back to that after a few minutes. Shri Shuka Vacha, Buddhindriya Mana Prana Janana Masajal Prabhu, Matrarthancha Bhavarthancha, Almana Akalpanayacham, Saisha Upanishad Brahmi Purvesham Purvajair Dhridham, Shraddhaya Dharayadhyastham, Kshemam Gacheta Ginchana, അത്രദേവർണയിഷ്യാമി ഗാഥാം നാരായണാന്യതാം നാരദസ്യ സംവാദം ഋഷേർ നാരായണസ്യ ച. സോ ശുഭബ്രഹ്മർഷി മെൻഷൻസ് ദെയർ ദാറ്റ് ദി വാട്ട് കൃഷ്ണ ഹാസ് ഗിവൺ വാട്ട് വി ഹാവ് ഗോട്ട് അറ്റ് ദ മോമെന്റ് ഈസ് ദിസ് ബോഡി മൈൻഡ് ഇൻ്റലിജൻസ് സെൻസസ് ആൻഡ് സോ ഓൺ ആൻഡ് വിത്ത് ദം വാട്ട് വിൽ ഹാപ്പൻ ഈസ് മാത്രാർത്ഥം ച ഭവാർത്ഥം ച. Bhava means repeatedly again coming back to this another body. That is bhavam. Bhava means that. Taking another body and coming back. What another means? Punarabhi jananam, punarabhi maranam. Again repeated birth and death. So, it is not possible. Therefore, with all these things what we have got at the moment with us, it is not possible to realize the truth. That's what it says. So, in order to understand, or understand means, in other words, to experience that soul, it will not help. How will it happen when all these things which are active, body, mind, intelligence, senses, when they come peaceful, when they are peaceful in that state, nischalam. Nischalada is the word used in the Shastra. Nischalada means there is no movement anymore. Mind is in a totally... one who goes beyond the mind, beyond the intelligence, beyond the senses, beyond the body. It is in that state it is experienced. So therefore, Upanishads are saying, Kathopanishad mentions this. How it puts it is, Yada panjavatishtande jnanani manasa saha buddhischa navi cheshtadi tamahu paramam gedim. It says, Yada panjavatishtande. Panjavatishtande means, when the mind... Jnanani manasa saha, along with the mind, the five senses. Panchavatishtande means the five senses and the mind. Avatishtande. Avatishtande means they are not functioning, totally inert, completely quiet. They are not functioning anymore. At that time, buddhicha na vicheshtati. Intelligence also is not functioning. Intelligence is not functioning. Mind is not functioning, senses are not functioning, when everything is quietened down, at that time, it happens, it will happen. In other words, yoga process, how it is possible, this is from the yoga process it is spoken, from the yoga point of view, mind, intelligence and senses, when they are very active, that is what is vyavahara means, isn't it? Samsaram, Vyavaharam. In material existence, Vyavaharam starts with these three things. Which one? Mind, intelligence and senses. When they become quietened, if you bring them under control and quiet, that is called yogam. Yoga process means that. So, in the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna mentions this, isn't it? Dhyana Yogam chapter. Krishna mentions there a lot of things about bringing the mind, body, and senses all under control. All under control. So, that state, Krishna is saying, that state where mind control, body and mind, body, senses all under control, that state is very conducive for self-realization. That is how it is. That is why it is mentioned like that. The control of the body, discipline in the body, controlling of the body, the mind, discipline in the mind and senses, all of them, pranan, all of them in a controlled state, in a peaceful state, is very favorable for spiritual realization. That is why it is a yoga anishtana, yoga siddhi. It is mentioned like that, isn't it? So, yada panchava tishtante. So, when the... at the moment, what happens? The mind and intelligence is in the world outside, isn't it? And when it stops, when because of that, what is happening? The mind is active. If the senses are not even active, the mind is active. The intelligence is active with the world outside. So when they become peaceful, shanti hums inside, at that time, quietly, the satyam will shine inside. Satyam means the truth which is inside, Krishna's presence inside, will be slowly sensed from within. So, in other words, you will notice there, Almane Agalpanayaja. What does that mean? Agalpanayaja. Agalpanayaja means, all kalpana must come to an end. All the kalpana must come to an end. Kalpana means what? Kalpana means, the inside thoughts developing, various kinds of thoughts coming from, on various things. This was all kalpana, different kalpana. Kalpana is a part of the mind. Listen, it happens in the mind. So when kalpana stops, the real vastu inside will shine. The real vastu inside will shine. So look for this example. There is a screen and the cinema is shown on the screen. As long as you are seeing the cinema, you won't see the screen. Is it not? When you are seeing the cinema, you won't see the screen. When the cinema is over, you see the screen. It's like that. The soul inside, he is there. But the cinema is going on inside. And that's what we are seeing. There's a cinema going on inside, isn't it? Continuously. So all kinds of thoughts coming one way or the other. And creating different impressions inside. Drama is going on inside, or the cinema is going on inside. At the moment, we are watching the cinema or the drama inside. So, when we attention falls or Shraddha becomes very serious, Shraddha develops, that Shraddha will lose interest in the cinema and it will fall on the screen. It will fall on the screen. It will happen one day. It has to happen. If it doesn't happen, all this has no meaning. When the rishis has given us Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, Upanishads and all that, they know it will happen because it has happened to them. That's why with full conviction they are telling us. It's not something that they have given some statement and left it like that. No, it has happened to them and they are saying to us it will happen when your attention on the screen, on the cinema stops. Therefore, first thing to the mind has to become still. Intelligence has to become still. Senses have to stop its activity when all these things happen. So, what is the way? Because you can see here that when in us for at the moment, these three states are there. That's the cinema. Which one? Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti. It's a cinema that is going on within us, isn't it? In the screen. Behind the background is the soul. And the cinema is the Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti state. And in these, when they are coming and going, because these three states are coming and going one after the other, in all of us, isn't it? Either we are in these three, one of these three states, you are always. Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti. So when these three states are coming and going, the vastu, what is inside, will not shine in outside. So when it touches that screen inside, at that time it will come out. At that time it will, vastu inside has to come out. Now, if you ask a question then, if it is like that, what is the point in the, we are engaged in sadhana and several other things, isn't it? Spiritual activities, which is addressed as spiritual activities. Sadhana and other things may prepare us for that, but it may be a long haul. In the sense, many activities what is done in spiritual life in the name of sadhana, japam, kirtanam, dhyanam, so many things what we do, it will all help towards that. It will all help towards that in the sense, at least while doing that, we won't go and do other nonsense. If you don't have japam, dhyanam, sadhana and all that, what will happen? We'll be 24 hours busy with the world outside. So, in order to shift that attention, these things may help. To an extent, it will help also to take us attention away from there. So, how does that, what is the way to that truth inside to come out? That is what he mentions there. The third chapter, third verse, if you look, you will see, Saisha Upanishad Brahmi Purvesham Purvajair Dhritha Shraddhaya Dharayedhyastam Kshemam Gacchet Akinchana. That is the way he says that that truth will come out. The only way the truth will come out, he says, Saisha Upanishad Brahmi Purvesham Purvajair Dhritha Shraddhayad Dharayedhyastam Kshemam Gacchet Akinchana. He is saying here that this Vedam, this third verse, he says, this Vedam which has got interest in the Brahman, which wants to express the Brahman, and which is meant to direct us towards the truth, this has been studied by Mahatmas, great personalities from time immemorial. So they have, with Shraddha, they have Shraddhaya Dharayet. The word used is Shraddhaya Dharayet. With Shraddha, they have made Dharana. Dharana is a word in the spiritual terminology. You have got Yamam, Niyamam, Asanam, Pranayamam, Pratyaharam, then comes Dharana. What does Dharana means? Prior to Dharana in Yoga Vasana, Yoga process, Ashtanga Yogam, we have to have control of the mind, control of the senses, Shamam Damam. And there is this regulative principles, Yamam Niyamam. Then to sit in one place peacefully and to keep the body under control, Asanam. Keeping the Pranayamam for helping the mind and the flow of air, Pranans flow inside. Pranayamam inside. So first thing what they have done was getting the body and the mind under control, senses under control, and freedom from this chalanam, from the movement of the body. These are all favorable conditions for spiritual life, for realizing the truth. That's what Bhagavad Gita is saying. Bhagavatam is also saying the same thing. That if the body has come under control, mind has come under control, senses are under control, it's a favorable situation for spiritual life. So, that is why it mentions here, Shraddhaya Dharayet, with Shraddha focused on the truth, Dharana. So, Yamam Niyamam Asanam, then Pranayamam, after that what is known as Pratyaharam. Pratyaharam means that whatever we have, when these four things have happened, Yamam Niyamam Asanam Pranayamam, from there Pratyaharam will come. Pratyaharam means externally everything is peaceful through Yamam Niyamam Asanam Pranayamam. Externally everything is peaceful. And inwardly, where you have got the problem with the mind intelligence, they have also come under control. That state is called Pratyaharam. What does it mean? What it means is that you are not allowing any more objects from outside to come inside. Normally in us, when we are studying Shastram or when we are in the yoga state, normally what happens? Still there is possibility of things from outside to come inside, isn't it? That our attention will fall, something will come from outside and take our attention away. That will always happen. So in order that to come to an end, when it has fully stopped anything coming from outside, that means none of the senses is looking for any gratification from outside world. That is called Pratyaharam. Aharam, it's not acquiring no more aharam for any of the senses, any of the food, any food for any of the senses. On the other hand, inside, all things are coming to a steady state inside. That means mind, intelligence, all of them inside are in a very peaceful state. That is that state of pratyaharam. And when that state has happened, the knowledge of the soul or the thing what you are after, that means self-realization, for which you have invested all your energy, it's going to bring its result and you start experiencing that from inside, and that is called dharana. So here you will see, shraddhaya dharayet yastam kshemam gachet akinchana. Shuka Brahmarshi is saying there, Saisha, Upanishad, Brahmi, Purvesham, Purvajair Dhrdha, Shraddhaya Dharayed, Dhyastam, Kshemam Gached Akinchana. So he is in a state of Dharana. Dharana is that very close to the Dhyanam, proper meditation. Dharana is the state before that Dhyanam, meditation state. So he says here that, he says to Parikshit, my dear king, the way for that Upanishad is she, it is female, Upanishad is she, said that only way it can happen is that when these things comes under control, when everything comes under control, then Upanishads, she will come outside. Upanishads are mentioned as Upanishad Sundari. Upanishad beauties, as they are called, they will come. Upanishads is a female gender, because she is knowledge, isn't it? Srilingam is knowledge. So, feminine. in other words, there, ahankaram, false ego, has no entrance, no entry there. False ego has no entry. That means, when we completely lose the false ego inside, totally gone away from inside, it is at that stage that when everything comes under control. When there is false ego operating, I am doing, I am enjoying, is there. Ahankartra, aham bhokta, is there. So, he says here, Saishahi Upanishad Brahmi. Saishahi Upanishad Brahmi. Because what is Upanishad means? Upanishad does not mean a book. It's not what it meant by Upanishad. Upanishad means knowledge. Upanishad means knowledge. So that knowledge is called Upanishads, Brahmavidya. Brahmavidya is called Upanishad. Upanishad, that is why in Upanishads, you won't find there is no lecture or class or teaching. Teaching, class and lecture and all is for material subjects. Upanishad's knowledge cannot be taught. It has to be realized within. So that is why it mentions here. So whenever you somewhere in the world, doesn't matter where it is, if someone realizes the truth, you have to go there. He cannot print books and deliver the knowledge to people. That's not possible. Spiritual knowledge is not possible to deliver through books or through anything. Then why do we print books and distribute the books? In order to bring people to spiritual life, to bhakti you can do that. Bhakti you can make some propaganda in bhakti. Like bhakti is always done together with many people, isn't it? So while execution of bhakti, while chanting together, sankirtanam, nama sankirtanam or bhajan, all these things, collection of people can help. But when it comes to the realization of the truth, what is in this 87th chapter, Vedastuti, Shuka Brahmarshi is saying here that if ever anyone realizes the truth, once he has realized it, you have to go to him. That is the principle. Not to university, go to him, it says. So that's where the problem is, that where it will happen, nobody can say. Someone may realize the truth in somewhere in the corner of the world, anywhere, it can happen. But when they realize it, you have to go to that person who has realized. And if you go there, and then you will realize the truth from him, you have to get your lamp lighted. It may or may not happen. But sometimes you will see this in the Upanishads, this particular aspect. That sometimes you see rishis, sages, they go to a king and asking him about self-realization. Because he has realized it. The sages haven't realized it yet. That example is there. For example, Sugabrahmarshi going to see King Janaka and asking from King Janaka about spiritual life. It's very interesting. Janaka lives in Mithila in the palace. He is a king, emperor he was, isn't he? In the Solar dynasty, long, long time back. So Vedavyasa Maharshi's son is Sugabrahmarshi, isn't it? Sugadeva Goswami is his son. So Vedavyasa Maharshi taught him everything. What he knew, he has taught him. And then he told him, now you go and meet King Janaka. He will instruct you about rest, what you have to know, he says. So then Sugabrahmarshi crosses over Himalayas. So it shows that he has traveled from somewhere else. In the Puranam, the way Sugabrahmarshi has crossed over many mountains and rivers and everything to come to Mithila to see Janaka. And when he came there, first he was admitted into the big gardens in front of the palace where Janaka was living. So he came to the palace, the gatekeepers, they stopped him there. And when he told that he has come to see Janaka to discuss about the truth, they let him in. So they told him, because they had to get permission from Janaka before he was escorted inside. So he was asked to stay in the garden, palace of the temple gardens. King Janaka already knew that he was there before the realized personality, and he is the king at the same time. So Janaka told his gatekeepers that let him stay in the garden for some time. For a few days, Sugabrahmarshi had to stay in the garden before entering into the palace. And then later on, we talked about this in the second chapter when we discussed Bhagavad Gita, how Sugabrahmarshi was brought inside and Janaka was and Sugabrahmarshi had questioning each other. Sugabrahmarshi is a king and he is a realized soul. Janaka is a great sage, but he has come to hear from Janaka that how in a realized state Vyavaharam is possible. He is asking that question. So Janaka answers all that in their conversation between them. So here, that is the same thing. There you will see. There is a story in the Upanishad. There is a king called Janashruti. Janashruti was a king. And there was a personality who used to, his job was, he had a bullock cart. He was owned by a person called Raikwa. Raikwa owned, this is in the Yoga Vasishtam, this story comes. Raikwa used to drive a bullock cart. And one day, Janashruti the king, he was well known in the kingdom. Everybody used to talk about Janashruti. What a noble personality he was. And not only that, he was very much respected, and his glories were even spoken by in other kingdom. So one day when Janashruti was living in his palace garden, he was staying in the palace garden, a group of birds were flying on top of the palace, and they were talking to each other. So one of the birds were saying to another bird, Janashruti knew their language also, like we communicate, they also communicate. So Janashruti knew their language. So he says that Raikwa, he was saying, one bird was saying to the other, you know this king Janashruti, he is so well known because he is so realized about the truth. Not only that, as a king he has performed so many charitable activities, and his name is spread all over the world, all over the creation. Like that, one bird is talking about this king Janashruti. So another bird is replying, you must be really stupid. This Janashruti, you don't know, he is nothing compared to Raikwa. As far as realization is concerned, you can't compare Janashruti with Raikwa. Raikwa is so realized that Janashruti must go and take instructions from him to realize the truth. This is what the other bird was saying. Janashudhi has never heard about Raikwa. And he was absolutely shocked that there is someone else who is more realized than me, because Janashudhi was already in a very elevated state, and he was thinking that who is this Raikwa? We never heard about such a person before, and I would like to find out who it is. He called all his ministers and inquired from him, have you heard about a person called Raikwa? They said, no, we don't know who this Raikwa is. That was the reply. And at that time, then Janashudhi sent the soldiers to find out who this Raikwa is. They traveled all over the kingdom and eventually they found him. When they went there, what did they see? There was a bull cart. The bulls were tied to the cart and it was lying there. And one person was lying underneath that cart with one leg on top of another leg and resting there. And his name was Raikwa. And he is the personality we are talking about. So the soldiers, they have the authority, isn't it? They told Raikwa that king wants you. We have to take you to the king, he said. Raikwa says to him, if the king wants to see me, he can come. This was Raikwa's answer. He can come. So they go back and reported this to the king. So the king thought, this is very interesting. I never had anybody telling me like this to come and see him. So the king anyway decided to come, and first visit of the king, he comes to see Raikwa, and he says to Raikwa that he paid his respects to Raikwa first, and he says to him, why are you in this situation here, underneath this bullock cart lying like this? And offers a lot of facilities to discuss with Raikwa about spiritual truth, wanted to invite him to the palace. Raikwa says to the king, you can keep your palace and your comforts there. I have nothing to do with it, he said. And I'm not interested in talking to you, he said. And king got very disappointed. He goes back. And then he realized it that he did not approach Raikwa in the proper way. Transcendental knowledge will not be given freely like that. So he understood what the Shastram says, how one should approach a realized soul. So accordingly, king prepares himself and comes to see Raikwa second time with full respect and paying obeisances and inquiring in a very submissive way. And then Raikwa speaks to him. That is there in the Yoga system. So what the important thing is, Upanishad Sampradayam is different. The way Upanishad's knowledge was transmitted. So that is why Shuka Brahmashri is mentioned here. Saisha Upanishad Brahmi Purvayasham Purvajair Dhridam. Purvayasham Purvajair Dhridam. In the past, how great personalities, Upanishad personalities, how they have realized Upanishad's knowledge. Brahmi Purvesham Purvajair Dhritha. Purvesha means in the ancient times. Purvajair means those who lived in those days. How they have approached the truth. Saisha is like that, he says. Saisha Upanishad Brahmi Purvesham Purvajair Dhritha Shraddhaya Dharaye Dhyastam Kshemam Gacchet Akinchana. Kshemam Gacchet Akinchana. In other words, what he says here, that what is the benefit of this Upanishads? Kshemam Gacchet. That is the benefit of the Upanishads is Kshemam Gacchet. Because once you know this Upanishads, it is the final thing, final knowledge. There is nothing to be known afterwards. Because everybody is inquiring after that truth in this world through different processes, whether jnanam, karmam or bhakti, whatever it is. People are inquiring after that. Now, in spiritual life you can see this, that a process is established by some great personality. He comes and he establishes a process and then he goes. After that what happens? General class of people, they will just continue the process. But they don't go beyond than that. They will stay with that process. And because they are stopped, at that point they have stopped. Isn't it? They can't go any more further than that. Because what they have understood, they have accepted that. They have brought it into their practice in life. But realization hasn't happened yet. No realization hasn't happened yet. All what has happened is, their attention has been brought to the Shastram. And they have been told that these things should be done in life first as a preliminary thing. And then most of the people in this world, if you see what they'll do, they will take to spiritual life first, and then they follow the principles, regulative principles, the sadhana process. So regulative principles, sadhana process, that will be there in life. They'll follow it through for a long period of time in life, but then they don't know what to do after that. Where should we go after that? That's where everyone finds difficult, isn't it? Where to go next? What's the next thing to do? So in that moment, that's where this Vedastudhi or Shudhagita is saying to us, Shubramashi is saying to Parikshit, that Saisha Upanishad Brahmi. Brahmi means Brahmi Sthiti, the Brahmi state. Upanishad Brahmi, Purvesham Purvajair Dhridam. In the ancient times, Purvigas, Purvas means the ancestors who followed this tradition, what they done, Purvajair Dhridam, Saisham Upanishad Brahmi, Shraddhaya Dharayed. With Shraddha, they performed Dharana. Tatham, Gatham, Kshemam Gacchet Aginchana. They come to that state because if you know this Upanishad, he says here, it is the ultimate Kshemam, ultimate welfare for everyone. We are also inquiring after that, but this is not an academic education, that you have to know first. It's not an academic education. Because what will happen is, the spiritual education, if it becomes academic education, then it's gone, it's finished. Then it cannot work anymore. Because what for is this education, spiritual education? Spiritual education is for this purpose, I want to escape. I want to escape from here, escape from the body, escape from a mind. I don't want anymore a gross material body, don't want a mind, I don't want this material intelligence, I don't want these kind of senses, because all this is upadhi for me. They bind me to this material world. So freedom from the body, mind, intelligence, ego, that is all the goal. So I want to escape from that, and that is a selfishness. You may call it as selfishness. But swartham sambhadayet buddha. It is swarthada. Swarthada means this swarthada, selfishness is necessary in spiritual life. This selfishness is necessary in spiritual life. If you have an intelligence with this selfishness, it will help. But if, on the other hand, if you don't have this intelligence, if you don't have this selfishness, and if you are still back, going back to the world again, looking for some recognition in the world, then he will not get it. He will not get it. What it means is that attention should go from the world, and in order to that attention to go towards the soul, it's important that he has to become selfish. And if he does that, in the proper way, if he becomes selfish, in the eyes of the world, he is the most selfless person. He's the most selfless person. Why? Because if he has realized the truth by becoming selfish, his presence in this world does a lot of good to the rest of the world. Therefore, the rest of the world will recognize his selfishness and accept him, take his benefit from his presence in this world. So, in this one particular instance, therefore, you have to become selfish. There is nothing you can do about it. If you are getting completely pulled by the material energy or the forces of material nature, then this selfishness won't happen. Selfishness won't happen. And that is why it's mentioned here, Krishna calls in the Bhagavad Gita that selfishness as Vyavasayalpiya Buddhi. Vyavasayalpiya Buddhi is this selfishness for realizing the truth, to go inward looking, that nature in a person. So that discrimination, in order that to happen, academic education won't help in that direction. Swarthada, selfishness is necessary. So, in order for that to happen, how long it will take? Very difficult to say, because the peace is necessary inside, shanti is necessary, and first of all, he has to decide, I need that shanti or samadhanam or peace inside. In order to have that, you need a certain selfishness. If you are not selfish, what will happen? You will go after various things in this world and you lose your shanti inside. And that is the result of that. But that one who has got that selfishness in his center, that is the secret. One has got that selfishness inside, that is the secret. Spiritual secret is this selfishness. This selfishness is the spiritual secret. So, because where is this selfishness? The place where that selfishness goes in, swarthada. Because if you don't have that selfishness, you will have no power to do anything. You will have no power to do anything. So, whatever selfishness we have inside, we all have selfishness in us. But where you put that selfishness, that's the question. Some people put their selfishness in their family. Some people put the selfishness in terms of the country. Some people put the selfishness in their workplace. Everybody has some selfishness, isn't it? People put their selfishness at different places. Some people who are very dedicated to work, you can see. Boy, they put their selfishness at the work spot. And some people, they have invested their selfishness in something else, in the family life. All selfishness centered around the family. Or all selfishness centered around the company where they work for. Or all selfishness centered around, some people have selfishness invested in the country. So selfishness is there in everyone, but where you have invested that selfishness, that is more important. And one who has invested that selfishness on the soul, he can have spiritual life. Otherwise it is not possible. So if you invest this selfishness for other purposes, like for the sake of family, or for the sake of the country, or for the sake of the society or the company where we are working, it will sometimes give pain to others. It will give, in our selfishness, we may give pain to others, to other living entities, isn't it? Or make others' life hellish. It will happen, whether you are in the government, or whether you are in the operating in a company environment, or you are operating in a family environment, doesn't matter. There will be that selfishness. If you are put there, it will eventually cause some distress to somebody else. It has to happen. So, when you have decided that ultimately what is going to happen is for my own real benefit and shanti, and in order to do that, shanti is necessary inside, then you can see once that decision has made properly, then it will be difficult for us to hate anybody. If it is properly done at the proper place, if that selfishness has fallen in the proper way, at the proper place for self-realization, then that cannot create any pain to anybody, because you have put the selfishness in the right place. When it is not happening, then what will happen is you won't be able to earn a lot of money after that, and you won't be able to hate anybody, you won't be able to steal anything from this world. You won't be able to quarrel with anyone. You won't be able to develop hate towards anyone. So, because you will know all of those things are going to take away that shanti inside, which is necessary for realization. And you will start rejecting everything. I don't need this. I don't need that, in that way. So, in that state, that is when others will say that this person is not selfish anymore. He is selfless. He is selfless. Freedom from that selfishness. We may think superficially that he is selfish. But when someone starts thinking, my shanti is important and I do not want to have anything in this world by losing my knowledge of the self or self-realization, I do not want anything, that selfishness is not wrong. That selfishness is not a wrong thing. But only thing is, with selfishness, you have to add knowledge into it. Knowledge into that. Because because you can see this, that Parikshit was selfish, isn't it? Parikshit was selfish. Why? He threw away the kingdom. And what for? For the sake of the soul. For the sake of the soul. So some point in life, we have to make that decision that selfishness is necessary, like Parikshit had. You may call Parikshit as selfish. He wanted to look after himself instead of looking after the kingdom. He threw the kingdom away and looked after his own interests after that. At that point, he was concerned about himself more than the kingdom. When he was cursed by Sringi, at that time he decided. So, which indicates to us that if you want to realize the self, you have to become selfish. But that selfishness means not it is deposited on the, it is not invested in the home or family or in this company or in the society or in the country, rather on the right place where it is meant to be. Invest in the selfishness. So that is why Parikshit says here that why did he do it, throw it away everything? For the protection of the soul. He wants to escape from here. In order to do that, shanti is necessary, peace is necessary. Kingdom or empire, he understood the point. What was the point he has understood? As soon as a Brahmana boy took his tongue out and said a few words, kingdom is finished, empire is finished, everything is finished in life for Parikshit, isn't it? So he understood at that point, this is the value of my kingdom. A young 5-6 year old Brahmana boy, he took his, pulled his tongue out and said a few words that 7 days from now Parikshit has to die. That's all he spoke, isn't it? As soon as he said that, Parikshit understood, this is my, how much my kingdom is worth. That it can be destroyed by a few words from the tongue of a Brahmana boy, and therefore Parikshit became selfish. He realized that this kingdom doesn't mean anything. This is the same illusion all of us are in this world. That world is important, house is important, family is important, so many things are important, and we live in this world in that way. But as soon as the warning comes to leave this world, then we know, look back and see what is important at that time. Would you still think that the world is important, family is important? As soon as the death comes in front of us and stands and says to us, now leave this body and go. So that is why, that is at least at that point we have to become selfish. Like Parikshit has become selfish in that way. So here, as soon as he realizes the Brahmana boy has spoken like this, immediately he thought, what is this kingdom, what is this empire? He threw away everything and came and sat there in the Ganga River. Near the Ganga River, he came and sat there. So, important thing is, where you invest this swartham or selfishness is important. Here he says here, first thing is, shanti is necessary. That is why he mentions here that, kshemam, he says here, isn't it? Saisha Upanishad Brahmi Purvesham Purvajair Dhrita Shraddhaya Dharayet Vyastam Kshemam Gachet Akinchana. So those who have invested their selfishness of getting Kshemam. Kshemam means the ultimate benefit, ultimate realization, ultimate goal. Those who have invested their Shraddha, those who have invested their attention on the ultimate self-realization, Saisha Upanishad Brahmi Purvesham Purvajair Dhrita Shraddhaya Dharayed Dhyastam Kshemam Gachet Akinchana. They will go in that direction because they have invested everything there. So, first thing is to develop in this world this understanding. In order to come to that Paramarthiyam. Paramarthiyam means absolute level. On an absolute level. For example, what we experience now, everything is on a relative level, isn't it? Happiness is relative here, or the distress is relative here. Nothing is on an absolute platform. But when you're talking about happiness on an absolute level, when we have to get to that stage, it mentions here that that is what it is mentioned there. Shraddhaya dharayes estam kshemam gached aginchana. That kshemam is referring to that absolute self-realized state. That is kshemam. That means you don't have to accept another material body again. Birth, death, old age and disease has gone away. Transmigration soul has stopped. And karmam, I am the doer, I am the enjoyer, has gone away. Ragadvesham has left. Everything has changed. And completely situated on the platform of the soul. And that is what it is called here as the Upanishad, Saisha Upanishad Brahmi. Purvesham Purvajer Dada Shraddhaya Dharayet Yastam Kshemam Gachet Akinchana. So here normally world offers to us two things. in this world, what world gives to us is either power or peace. They offer us either power or peace. Most of the people will go after power in this world, isn't it? That because it's very tempting. Power is very tempting. Peace or shanti, both power and peace you will get in this world. You can get both power as well as peace. Both will come, will stand in front of us. But we will ask always for the power. We will ask always for the power. That's the way it is, isn't it? Power is what is more matters to us, not the peace. Peace, we will say, if it comes, it's fine. Even if it doesn't get, it doesn't matter. But power is more important. So, power, because what Upuranam is telling us, Bhagavatam also is telling us, if you acquire power, you can even become finally like Hiranyakashipu. That's what you will get from the power. Most of the people won't understand that. Mostly people will choose for power. If you go in that route, the maximum you can get is like Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyakashipu acquired the power of all the three planetary systems, isn't it? He managed to get control of everything in this creation. And Hiranyakashipu asked for power and Prahlada asked for shanti. You have to compare these two personalities. Normally in the world, what's available is either power or peace. Hiranyakashipu asked for power. Prahlada asked for shanti. Nowhere you will see Prahlada asking for anything. He told Narasimhamurthy, isn't it, that if you encourage me, the only boon I am asking from you is that give me a boon so that in such a way that I won't ask for anything. That boon, give it to me. That is what Prahlada said to Narasimhamurthy in his prayers, isn't it? Prahlada says to Narasimhamurthy, I am asking for this boon, not to ask for any boon, he says. And shanti is what Prahlada opted, and power is what Hiranyakashipu opted. So this is the difference between Hiranyakashipu and Prahlada. So you will mention here that that Hiranyakashipu, who frightened the whole world, whole creation, the heavenly planets, earthly planets, everywhere, that Hiranyakashipu, in front of Prahlada, he started getting frightened. He started getting frightened. He failed there in front of Prahlada, isn't it? So, because ultimately what happened? Hiranyakashipu tried his best to frighten Prahlada and put him into all, tortured him through all sorts of means. But finally, it all ended up in destruction of Hiranyakashipu himself. God destroyed in that process. So, when Prahlada always wanted shanti, whereas Hiranyakashipu always wanted power. Always wanted power. And when Hiranyakashipu asked Prahlada to come to see him, Kayadhu brought him in front of him. And then there is a conversation between Prahlada and Hiranyakashipu. And Hiranyakashipu asking Prahlada what he has learned at school in his teachers, what they have taught him. So Prahlada answered straight away, the only thing what I have stated is the life is meant for worshipping Krishna, for worshipping Vishnu. There is nothing else to be done in this world. He mentions like that. So when Hiranyakashipu heard that, he got very angry, isn't it? And he got so upset with him. Back and forth, they spoke a lot of things. And Prahlada was very peaceful. Hiranyakashipu was very agitated inside. If you read through the Bhagavatam, you will see those verses. Prahlada was very peaceful. Hiranyakashipu was very agitated inside. And at one point, Hiranyakashipu's anger became so high, seeing this obstinacy. He saw Prahlada is not listening to him. I am his father. Why is he not listening to me? And that too, he is a young child. He's not that old either. He's not listening to me. And Hiranyakashipu became very furious with Prahlada. So he started asking this one question. After torturing him a lot, remember Prahlada was tortured a lot by Hiranyakashipu. Then he says to him finally, where do you get all this strength from? to talk to me like this and to behave like this in front of me? He asked that question to Prahlada. So, kamam, krodham, valsalya, all these things are inside. So, as much as Prahlada was answering, Hiranyakashipu's anger was getting worse. And his anger was getting worse. So, because Hiranyakashipu did not want the kshemam. Kshemam was not his goal, isn't it? So, his goal was, others should pay their obeisances to me. And I am a big king or an emperor. And I am controlling even the heavenly planets. Indra should come here and pay his respects to me. And all the demigods should listen to me. This was all the... Hiranyakashipu's plan was even bigger than what Hitler or others had. Much higher level he was planning. Not even this planet he was not satisfied. So, therefore, because of that, Hiranyakashipu's situation was that there was never any peace in Hiranyakashipu's inside. And he managed to get control of all these things. That means power was actually the force behind it. That Hiranyakashipu, later day times in his life, he started getting frightened with Prahlada. Because he started seeing that there is something in this Prahlada that is causing me some problem. Hiranyakashipu is worrying. He started worrying about it. You can imagine this. You put it back in this way, the one personality who has took control of the whole creation, whole three planetary systems, is saying to Prahlada and getting fearful about Prahlada. Prahlada is only a little boy, 5 or 6 years old, and Hiranyakashipu has a complete control of all the universities, all the universes even. So, he mentions there, if you look into the 7th canto, that chapter is important because of this. Seventh canto, if you look in the 8th chapter, you will see there, in the 8th chapter, this is very close to Narasimhamurti's appearance. Narasimhamurti has appearance at that time. He hasn't appeared yet. Up to this time, between Prahlada and Hiranyakashipu, there was a lot of talking back and forth. Hiranyakashipu accusing Prahlada being disobedient, saying to him that you are a bad person in our family. Our family is so reputed and famous, and you have come and taken birth in this family who is worshipping Vishnu. We cannot tolerate that, he said. And before that, he has tortured Prahlada a lot, isn't it? A lot of torture is mentioned in the Bhagavatam, which you know, that how he was put into difficulties various ways, that he wanted to frighten Prahlada forcefully. The previous chapters, if you read, Diggajer Dandashu Gaischa Abhijaravapadane Maya Abhisandirodascha Gharadha Nairabhojanehi. That is in this 5th chapter, you will see, verse 43 and 44. Elephants started kicking Prahlada. Very powerful poisonous snakes were used to bite Prahlada. And all he was thrown away from the top of the mountain, and he was locked up. Sometimes he was exposed to starvation, hunger, and snow, wind, fire, water. He was soaked with all those things. In spite of doing all these things, Prahlada didn't die. Prahlada didn't die. So, these things started making Hiranyakashipu to think, what is actually going on here? He is doing his best to destroy Prahlada, but Prahlada seems to be still very peaceful and being protected by some force. That much Hiranyakashipu understood. There is somewhere some source, this protection is coming for Prahlada. That is why, whereas He is fully angry, very angry, who Hiranyakashipu. Everything is failing, all his program has failed. So finally he says to him, Krudhasya, if you look in the 8th chapter, that 7th verse, Krudhasya yasya kambande trayoloka saheshwaraha tasya me abhidavan mudha shasanam kimbalotyagaha. He says to Prahlada, Prahlada, you know me. If I say something, all the three planetary systems and the control of the three planetary systems, they get frightened. So from there you can understand my strength. But where do you get this strength from that you are able to reject my strength so easily like that? Tasya bhe abhidhavan mudha shasanam kim balo tyaga. Where do you get this power? A little boy, 5 years old, it's a very interesting question, isn't it? That Hiranyakashipu is so powerful and he has tried to destroy Prahlada by all means, it didn't work. So Hiranyakashipu started getting a little bit nervous. What's happening now? There is something happening. Otherwise, how come this boy has come and taken birth in my family? And he is not willing to budge an inch. I am trying to train him up in our way. That means Hiranyakashipu's way. And he is not willing to take anything seriously. I send him to school, it's not working. I employed Shanda and Amarka, the two teachers, to train him up. They are also finding it difficult to change his mind. And eventually, for a father to kill his own child is a difficult thing. But when he senses that Prahlada is going to be a thorn in his life, in this world, he decided to destroy him. He tried that, also failed. So Hiranyakashipu started realizing something isn't waiting, going to happen. That's the mentions here. Krudhasya yasya gambande trayolokaha saheshwaraha tasya me bhidavan mudha shasanam kimbalotyagaha. How come you are not frightened, and where do you get this strength from? Where do you get this strength from? That was the question who Hiranyakashipu was asked to Prahlada. It's an interesting question. So, and you are standing in front of me with absolutely no fear. And important thing here is, Hiranyakashipu is in tension and Prahlada has no fear at all. They are talking to each other, but Hiranyakashipu is completely in tension, stress. And Prahlada has no tension. And Hiranyakashipu is under depression. You know why? Because seeing me, he is thinking, Prahlada is not getting frightened. That's what is causing the depression. Prahlada stood there in total peace, Shanti inside. And whenever Hiranyakashipu has spoken anything, it did not cause any stirring up any emotions or feelings or movement inside the mind. And this has shocked Hiranyakashipu. So Hiranyakashipu, this is why it is spoken. Our vanity in this world is also like that. So, of course, this is the height of that vanity, Hiranyakashipu's vanity, that his own son, who is only 5 or 6 years old, who was least disturbed by Hiranyakashipu's questions and interrogation, and expecting him, this boy, to worship him, which he was not willing to do, and seeing that peacefulness inside Prahlada, Hiranyakashipu was really shocked. So he was asking this question, that you can see this. This is the, if you ask between power and peace, which is more powerful? Peace is more powerful, not power. Power is not the powerful thing. Peace is more powerful. Because power is a gross thing, peace is a very subtle thing. Peace is a subtle thing. Power is a gross thing. So therefore, subtle things are more powerful than the gross things. This power what Hiranyakashipu was exhibiting was very much weakened in the presence of Prahlada's peacefulness. Prahlada's peacefulness. You can see this has happened many, many times in the past also. Alexander came after invading many countries. From Greece he started. He invaded all his way from Greece. And that time he wanted to capture Bharatavarsham, isn't it? He wanted to invade India and take control of India as well. So after invading all that and came to India, And when he came to Ganga River, practically Alexander had good advisors in Greece. Like you can see, lot of tatvajnanam about the truth. What Aristotle and Socrates, all they have developed, most of it has come from the Upanishads. The knowledge that has come from the Upanishads. Upanishads knowledge is what they have developed later in their own way, according to that place and circumstances there. So at that time itself, Socrates had heard that in India there was great yogis who are capable of doing such wonderful things, but and who had greater realizations of the truth. So by nature, Alexander was also a person who was interested in that, to know about it. So when he came there, that he came to near the Ganga River bank, and there he came to meet someone in Avadhuta who was lying there underneath the tree. He was lying there underneath the tree. So he goes up to him and says to him, because he has heard about these great yogis, he wanted to take them back to Greece after invading all these places. He wanted to take them back to Greece with him. But when he invited him to come, he refused. He said, I won't be going anywhere. He is staying in his realized state. For him, Greece, India, America doesn't exist. It has gone beyond than that. It is in that state he is lying there. Alexander goes to him and tell him, I'll take him to Greece. He says, so he refused and said that, and he just smiled by seeing Alexander's ignorance. He just smiled. Immediately he pulled out his sword. Alexander pulled out the sword and told him, I'm going to kill you now, he said. So at that time, that don't tell lies, he said. This yogi who was lying there, he says to Alexander, don't tell any lies. He was not frightened. Like Prahlada, he was not frightened. He just said, don't tell lies, because the power that has given you the power to lift your hand, to lift the sword, the power that has come to your hand to lift the sword, that has come from the soul, and I am that soul, he says. Can you imagine a reply like this? He wanted to physically take him from there. But this yogi who was lying there, he has gone beyond the body, so he could not accept this statement from, just like in the case of Jadabharata and Rahugana. Rahugana says, I'll punish you. Jadabharata is asking, punish who? Whom are you going to punish? That was this question. Same thing with Alexander also. Alexander is saying to the yogi, I'll take you from here. And yogi said, I'm not going anywhere. I'm everywhere, he said. Alexander could not understand. So he pulled the sword. You're not going to listen to me, he said. So yogi says to him, don't tell me lies. The energy what you are coming through your eye, sorry, through your hands, to take pull the sword out to kill me, that's coming from the Atma, from the soul, from me, he says to him. So when he heard that, because he is intelligent, Alexander is an intelligent person, he says to him, that why do you say like that? He says to Alexander, are you sure that you will get back to Greece first of all? That's what the yogi said. Yogi, seeing inside his destiny, what is kept in store for Alexander, he asked this question to Alexander. We call Alexander the Great, isn't it? He's asking Alexander, are you got a guarantee that you will get back to Greece? He says to him. So, as soon as he asked that question, Alexander sensed. You know why? Because Alexander sensed that there is some behind the scene, there is a plan to kill him. Alexander was conscious of that within his own army. There was, a coup was being planned against him. So when the yogi said this, immediately Alexander started reflecting on that, and his mind went in that direction at that time. And so he says, and this Alexander the Great is a personality who has frightened the whole world with his power of invasion. And he's standing here with the sword in the hand, and this bhikshu or yogi, he has nothing with him. He didn't have even food arranged for him. He has no food to eat, and he was wearing just a kaupin and lying there. So in front of him, all that strength is completely lost. Alexander lost that strength. Afterwards, he did not force him anymore. He left the place and started his return journey. Before long, he got killed on the way. Before long, he got killed on the way. But that is historical thing. The important things to understand from there is spiritual power and material power, you can't compare. They are two different levels. Spiritual power is based on shanti, realization and all that. Material power is based on the arrogance, anger and all other things associated with that. So, shanti, abhimanam or shreyas or prayas. Abhimanam is pride, isn't it? That is the force behind the material power. Pride, ego. That's the force behind the material power. Whereas, shanti, peace, behind that, the power behind that is self-realization and the soul. That is the power behind that. So, we have two options, either shreyas or prayas. Whether we want shreyas or prayas. If you have decided you want kshemam, that is why that word is important in the verse. Saisha Upanishad Brahmi Purvesham Purvajair Dhritha. That Shraddhaya Dharaye Dhyastam Kshemam Gachet Aginjana. Kshemam is referring to that. If you have decided kshemam as the goal, then Krishna is mentioned here that so whether you have to decide that first. Whether you want the kshemam. Kshemam means it is shreyas. Or if you want something else, power, which is prayas. Which is, so shreyas or prayas. So that decision one has to take first. So, and that is with vairagyam it comes. So one who have realized that I had enough of this world. There is nothing for me to gain in this world. That's decision. That is vairagyam. Don't want anything anymore from this world. Just want to escape from here. If one has come to that stage, because people come to that understanding at some time, that worked very hard, earned a lot of wealth in this world. And Prahlada says here, if you look into that 9th chapter, you will see in the 7th canto, what Prahlada says about that. 7th canto, 9th chapter. Verse 23. Drishtva maya divi vibhogila drishnyapanam ayushriyo vibhavamichyati yanjanoyam yasmat pitu kupitahasa vijrumbidabhru vispurjitena lulidasatute nirastaha. That Prahlada is saying Narasimha Murthy's prayers. He is glorifying Narasimha Murthy. He says to Narasimham that Drishtva maya divi vibhogila drishnyapanam ayushriyo vibhavam ichadiyan janoyam yasmad pidu kupitahasa vijrumbidabhru vispurjidena lulita satute nirastaha. That Prahlad is acknowledging there that the world is looking for certain kind of happiness. In this world, people are looking for certain kind of happiness. What is that? A long lifespan, a lot of wealth, and lot of material sense enjoyment, progress, and those things. Prahlad is saying to Narasimha Murthy, I have seen all that, what it means. Prahlad is saying this, a 5-year-old boy, is saying to his father, Hiranyakashipu, saying to Narasimha Murthy, that I have no interest in any of these things because I've seen all this, what it means. So that understanding has to come within oneself. Otherwise it is not possible. We'll still start thinking great about various things in this world, personalities and various things what goes on in this world. He says, Drishtva maya adi vibhogila drishnyapanam ayushriyo vibhavamichyati yanjanoyam yasmat pitu kupitahasa vijrumbhidabhru vispurjitena lalita satute nirastaha. He says, why I am saying I have seen all these things? How is Prahlada is able to say like this? Because he says here that my father was such a person who had control over everything and he had everything. Sometimes we talk about people like that. They have got everything, isn't it? So similarly, Prahlada is saying, Hiranyakashipu had everything with him. But all that everything what he had, all what happened was, the moment Narasimhamurthy has moved his eyelids, that was finished with that, isn't it? His power, his position, and his strength, and whatever you can say Hiranyakashipu had, everything was finished in one stroke. Therefore, I know how much worth it is, all these things. This is Prahlada's reading about that. And you have Yasmat Pidu Kupita Hasa Vijrumbhidabhru Vispurjidena. Kupita Hasam Vijrumbhidam. Who Hiranyakashipu was like that, with his anger and his looks, everything, all completely destroyed. Vispurjidena Lulita Satute Nirasta. By one stroke by Narasimhamurthy. In 1 second, everything was gone from this world. From there, I can see what does it really mean, all these things. Just like the way when Parikshit threw away his empire and walked out to prepare for death to Ganga River, this is the same thing, what Prahlad is talking about. So, with Vairagyam comes like that. Vairagyam comes very strongly when one comes to spiritual life seriously. Vairagyam must come. With what is that Vairagyam? Vairagyam is this, that the ultimate goal of Kshemam or welfare for the is self-realization. Once that hits a person, then for him all other things in this creation is of no value, no importance to him. So that is what he mentions in this verse, that he is asking this question. My father, when all the three worlds used to get frightened seeing him, And Hiranyakashipu's situation was like this, that all those things what people like to have in this world, wealth and all of the fame and that proudhi means one's own position in this world, that state, all these things I have seen, he says, because Hiranyakashipu had everything, nobody could go beyond than that, isn't it? And my father, if he had put his hands on his hip and if he had just smiled, all those great personalities in this creation, they used to they drop down. They were so frightened of him. Prahlad is saying like that about him. And that person, you have now taken him on your lap and have ripped him off from his chest and from the stomach, and he is lying here now. The personality in whose presence the whole world used to tremble and be frightened about, Hiranyakashipu, you have just taken him on your lap and ripped him off and put him on the floor. This is what he is. He says to you, Sadude Nirastaha. So from this I can understand what does this all mean. In other words, Prahlada is saying the illusion is so powerful that we are running after so many things in this world. This is powerful, that's powerful. Somebody is powerful. Nothing is powerful here. Power is actually in Krishna, nowhere else. How much Krishna gives, you can have that. That's what it is. But the source of power is always Krishna. That's why when he asked this question to Prahlada, he says, Hiranyakashipu could not understand where Prahlada is getting all the power from. So he asked Prahlada, where do you get all this power to talk like this? Prahlada's answer was, the source from where you are getting all this power to control everything in this creation, it is the same source, I am also getting my power. The source is the same, but it's coming through different channels. Through one channel, through Hiranyakashipu, it comes in one form, and through another channel, Prahlada, the force is coming in another way. That's all it is. Belamme Vaikuntha, he says. Prahlada says, Belamme Vaikuntha, source is Krishna. Vaikuntha is Krishna. Source is Krishna who gives the power. If he doesn't give the power, you are not going to have it. So the power source, the where it is coming from, is the same for Prahlada as well as for the Hiranyakashipu. When it comes in two different forms. One, it comes in the form of power. Other one, it comes in the form of peace. So most of the people opt for the power, but devotees like Prahlada, they opt for the peace because they know. So I do not inquire, I don't want to waste my time for this power, Prahlada says. So he says to Narasimha Murthy, I don't want any of these things. That if I have that state, that if I don't ask for any things, no matter, because Narasimha Murthy, even if he opens his mouth, I'm not frightened. Because when a lion opens its mouth, normally it means what? Isn't it? That's the end of it. So, naham bibhe majidate di bhayanagasya jihwarka netra brugudi. If you look into that same chapter, you will see one verse. In the 7th canto, in the Prahlada Stuti, 9th chapter, you will see this verse. I am not frightened how he is mentioning that. Naham vibhem ajidate di bhayanagasya. He says to, that is the verse number. It is in the Prahlada Stuti. Prahlada says to Jihwarka Netra Brugudir. That is in the 9th chapter, sorry. 9th chapter, he mentions there that 15th verse. Naham vibhe majrade di bhayana gasya jihwarka netra brugudi asapasogradam shtrad andrasraja kshadaja kesara shankha karna nirkhrada bida digibad haribhin nakhagrad. That verse. Naham vibhe vi ajidat tedi bhayanagasya jihwarka netra brugudi rabhasogra damstrad andrasraja kshadaja kesara shankha karna nurkhrada bhida digibha aribhin nakhagrad. He says here that when the tongue, Ajida, addressing Narasimha Murthy, Ajida means one who cannot be conquered by anybody else. Your ferocious tongue that is coming out, the mouth and the eyes which are like the sun, like a very powerful eyes, what the eyes of Narasimha Murthy, and the eyelashes, which is also very frightening, and the damstra, that special teeth, what they have got, the lion's teeth, isn't it? They are very powerful. And all of them, and added to that, Narasimha Murthy has taken the intestines from Hiranyakashipu and is wearing it like a garland around his neck. And he's sitting there in that mood. Narasimha Murthy is sitting there in that mood. And all this hair, what do they call it? The mane, isn't it? That mane is completely filled with blood. Narasimha Murthy, Hiranyakashipu's blood is dripping from that mane. Imagine that scene. So, and in that mood also. And he says all these things. And the ears, which are like a... how the lion's ears are in that way, and the sound what he has created, Narasimha Murthy has created, and he is looking, Prahlada is looking at these nails of Narasimha Murthy's hands and the legs and the nails from that. All these things is a very frightening scene, and Prahlada is saying to him, I am not frightened by all these things. Brahma was frightened, Lord Shiva was frightened, they all moved back, pulled back. Prahlada goes there to pacify. Lakshmi Devi also did not go anywhere closer. She is also saying, Prahlada, you go in front of him. Because Lakshmi Devi is only used to seeing another form, smiling form of Krishna. That's what Lakshmi Devi is used to in Vaikuntham, isn't it? That's what she has never seen a form like this before. So she is saying to Prahlada, you go and see what you can do. Go and talk to him. Bring him control and everything. So if you see in the Rukmini's letter to Krishna, Rukmini mentions that. If you read, you will see there. Rukmini wrote a letter to Krishna. Rukmini says, I have that beautiful form. Krishna is laughing when he said about that beautiful form. Narasimha Lokam and Abhiramam, it mentions the word in the Bhagavatam. That means it is such an attractive form for the whole world. When the letter Brahmana brought to Krishna, Krishna opened the letter and read that verse, what Rukmini has written about him. And Krishna is thinking to saying to Rukmini, that was that form such a nice form to look at? That was the question Krishna had to ask Rukmini later on, after everything was arranged, marriage was arranged. And after getting married, one day Krishna asked Rukmini, that form, you remember you wrote me that letter when you were from Dwaraka to the palace. I got the letter, I read the letter, Rukmini, but when I read the letter, this came to my mind that you mentioned there in the letter that, oh, such a beautiful form you manifested in this world. I don't think, at that time, because Rukmini is Lakshmi Devi, isn't it? At that time, I don't think you liked that form when I came there, did you? But now you are writing to me, or you shown that nice form to me once. So Krishna also is having fun with everybody in this way. So Krishna says to, so Prahlada is also having a great joy. Prahlada says to him, I'm not frightened about that form. Practically everyone was frightened. There was no one who was not frightened seeing that Narasimha's form, Narasimhamurti's form. Brahma was frightened, Shiva was frightened, and all that who came to pacify Narasimham at that time, if you see, you will see a list there of personalities who had come to pacify him. But first person to pacify Narasimham was Prahlada, to Prahlada. So Prahlada goes there and says to him that I am not frightened, seeing Naham bibhem majidati di bhayana gasya jihvaka netra brugudi rasabhogradamstrad whole description of Narasimha Murti is that ferocious form, and saying to him, I am not frightened. The proof that Lakshmi Devi was frightened is when Krishna asked this question to Rukmini later. Were you frightened? If you are not frightened, why did you not come to me at that time? And passive, but no, Lakshmi Devi was, everybody was pulling back. Brahma was pulling back, Shiva was pulling back, and Lakshmi Devi was also standing in the queue right behind everybody. So that's why Prahlada said to him, and at that time, so he says here, that I am not frightened, and then he says here, I am more frightened about this material world, Prahlada says. I'm not frightened about this form because demigods are frightened, everything. But for me, the fear is the world. Trashto asmi aham krupana valsala dusahogra samsara chakra kadana grasadam pranidham baddha sokarma bhi ushatthamate ingrimulam prido bavarga sharanam hoyase kadanu. You will see after a few verses later that trashto asmi aham krupana valsala dusahogra samsara chakra kadanal grasadam pranidam. Prahlada's real fear is about this material life, life in this world. We have to be like that, to be frightened about this life in this world, which we are not. That is why the problem is, we are thinking that spiritual life is something, what we have to go to some university, get a degree and hang it up on the wall, and you'll go back home, go back to Godhead. We made it so simple, spiritual realization. But Prahlada is saying here, I am an asura, demon by birth. Prahlada is saying to Narasimhamurti, I am a demon by birth. I know what I am made of, he says, my nature. Because by birth itself I am a demon. So I brought all those qualities with me. But trashtosmyaham krupana valsala dusahogra samsara chakram. But for me, by your mercy, I have understood that this very material existence is my greatest misfortune. As long as I've got a material body, it means that till I get to know the truth, which has to come only by Narasimhamurti's mercy, that's what he's saying to him. That when that happens, trashtosmyaham kripana valsala, that kripana valsala, the word used there in that verse, that you are someone who has got some mercy towards those who are kripana or who have got karpanyam. Karpanya means miserliness. Miserliness, what is our miser? We are all kripanas in that sense. What does that mean? That means Krishna has given us something very important thing to do in life, isn't it? He has given us a very important duty to perform in this world. That is to realize the truth in this body. That is our goal of life, and that is our purpose for which we have been sent here. But instead of doing that, getting occupied with all silly little things in this world and busy with that, that is called Kripanada, Karpanyam. Arjuna also had the same problem, isn't it? Karpanya doshava krita svabhava prachamitvan dharma sammuta cheta. Yeshra yeshra nishayam bruhi denme shishyasteham shadimam tvam prapanyam. Before Arjuna surrendered, he also had the same problem, Karpanyam. Karpanyam means Kripanada, this miserliness. That means Krishna has given something very valuable, a body like this, useful for self-realization. But instead of using for self-realization, using it for our fulfilling our vanity or for sense gratification, that is Karpanyam, Kripanada. So here, Prahlada is also saying to Krishna, Trashtosmyaham, that you have to protest Kripana Valsala Dusahogra Samsara Chakrakadanal Grasadam Pranitaha. I am caught up in this wheel of samsaram, material existence. And therefore, I am unable to escape from that. And added to that, I am also a Kripana miser. In other words, I have still have attachment here and I am trying to find happiness in this world. So, Vairagyam, that's what he's talking about. I haven't become able to detach myself from this world. Grasadam Pranida Baddha. Not only that, I am bound here. He is acknowledging that. Why? So karma bhi, because of my karmic activities. I have performed so much karma that there is so much karmic reactions going to come from that in various ways. He is saying all these things. Baddha so karma bhi ushattama tengri moolam pridobavarga sharanam hayase kadanu. What other option have I got? I have no other option. Therefore, I surrender unto you. Narasimha Murthy, Prahlada says to Narasimha Murthy in this way. So, that is why this samsara chakram, so many places you will see in the Bhagavadam, Bhagavad Gita, also talking about this material existence, samsara chakram. It's like a wheel of samsaram, they call it, isn't it? Constantly getting recycled, one body to another, one planet to another, one species to another. These things, one has to have faith first before talking about a God. God comes later. First we have to know the science behind it. In Vedic philosophy, in Vaidhya Dharma, if one who has principle, in these principles, one who has total faith, he is considered to be a believer. Not one who has faith in a personal God somewhere up there in the sky or in the heaven. There is a God in some planet somewhere in some form. Oh, I believe in that God. Veda has not given any importance to it. What Veda says to us, first to understand in what situation you are. Our present situation is that we are getting constantly changing our body. One body after another, isn't it? That, as far as that is concerned, we are not even truly sure whether it's true or not. And that means you are an atheist. If you have not accepted these principles of Vedam, Upanishads, and Vaidhi philosophy, that means you are an atheist. That's what it means. So, here, once you get on to this wheel, Shastram is teaching us all these things. Once you get on to this samsaram or wheel of material existence, it is impossible to come out of that. Therefore, show me the way, Prahlada says to Narasimha Murthy. That is what he asked Narasimha Murthy. Get me out of this cycle first. Show me a way how to come out of this wheel, of the wheel of samsaram. What is ultimately beneficial for me? So, that is what is referred to that word, Kshemam, in that verse. Saisha Upanishad Brahmi Purvesham Purvajair Dhritha Shraddhaya Dharaye Dhyastam Kshemam Gached Akinchana. How to get to that state of Kshemam? That is what that question is. So, I think it is 25 past 11 and we'll stop there. We'll continue on Monday. Tomorrow, we'll go to Bhagavad Gita. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.